Blog Talk Radio.
It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will. It's been too hard living, but I'm afraid to die. I don't know what's up there beyond the sky. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes it will. I go to the movie and I go downtown. Somebody keep telling me don't hang around. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes it will. Then I go to my brother and I say, brother, help me please. But he winds up knocking me back down on my knees. Lord, there have been times that I thought I could last for long, but now I think I'm able to carry on. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes it will.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another segment of Let's Talk Fort Worth. I'm Carrie Hines, your host. A reminder, we do not own the rights to the music you just heard. Also, please click tag and share. Tell someone Let's Talk Fort Worth is on the air. And we're about to break down the May 7th, 2022 ballot, which includes the 2022 bond package. The city's website states that the goal of the bond package is to maintain and improve existing infrastructure and address equity, provide mobility and city services in growth areas, enhance active transportation and recreational corridors, allow for flexibility and partnership opportunities, as well as achieving balance and fiscal stewardship. Well, they're telling us this will come at a cost of $560 million, plus hefty raises for both the mayor and the city council. Are we, the taxpayers of the city of Fort Worth, willing or even able to take on so much additional debt? Also tonight, we'll speak with a couple of the candidates in the District 4 city council race. That seat is being vacated by Councilman Kerry Moon. With that said, let's talk Fort Worth. Tonight on the line, we got Bob Willoughby on our panel tonight. And later, we're going to talk with both James McBride and Tara Wilson, who have agreed to be on our panel tonight to talk about that race. I think Ms. Wilson should be with us shortly, and I see Mr. McBride is already on the line. Good evening, Adrian. Good evening, Bob Willoughby. How are you?
Good evening, Carrie. Everything is wonderful.
Good. Hey, Bob. Can Bob not hear us? Okay, maybe. Maybe Bob's having some kind of technical difficulty. Good evening, James. How are you? Good evening, James McBride. Hi.
Oh, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Am I there?
Yeah, we're going to hopefully bring your opponent or one of your opponents on in just a little bit. So we were going to mute you until we see Ms. Wilson appear on the line, and then we were going to talk about the city council race for District 4, which is a special election because Carrie Moon is vacating that seat.
Absolutely, yes. I'm sorry. I thought I had to press 1 to get into the queue with you, but yes, go ahead and mute me.
You did. Okay, so Bob, are you with us?
Yeah, I was listening on the line, and I heard you say I was on the panel. I said, oops, I better pick up the phone and catch up where we're at here. You know, you're a few seconds behind if you're listening by on the Internet. So, but, yeah, I'm here.
You're here. Well, listen, this bond packet, very interesting, y'all. We got a lot of money floating around that they're asking for, and I'm just like, I'm going to give you a breakdown right now. And I spent the last couple of hours looking over these numbers, and they are mind-blowing. Basically, for streets and pedestrian mobility infrastructure, they are asking for $369,218,300. Can y'all tell that's like not a number I'm used to just be saying? That's 66% of what they're asking for streets, pedestrians, mobility infrastructure. And then they're asking for parks and recreation improvement of $123,955,500. Then they're asking for public library improvement of $12,505,200. Police and fire safety improvements, $39,321,000. And open space conservation for $15 million. That's crazy. I mean, that is crazy. I mean, I don't know that, you know, it's fair to the taxpayers to ask for all of this money. And I called the city secretary's office this week, and I asked for a breakdown of what these totals, you know, are in including. I mean, what are we talking about when you're asking for $369 million for streets and pedestrian mobility infrastructure, because that was somewhat vague. And I asked her that because the description said for streets and mobility-related projects. Well, mobility-related projects was somewhat vague to me. So I called and asked for a breakdown of these different propositions. And some of the things that I found within them were somewhat scary. So do you all think that maybe we should be asking for an audit before we just say yes to such hefty numbers? Or is it just me that thinks these numbers are just, like, possibly inflated?
Are you addressing it to James, or who are you addressing it to?
I got James on mute until Tara Wilson chimes in. If she doesn't chime in within the next 15 minutes, we're going to go ahead and talk to James about that raise.
Okay.
So,
take care. So, Bob, you want to begin?
Oh, it don't matter, man. Just Carrie, just tell us which one you want us to talk, because I talk too much. So just tell me when it's my turn.
Okay.
But who do you want to start with?
Starting with you. You are Adrian. We're talking about Proposition A, where they're asking for $369 million, which is 66% of what they're asking for in this bond package.
Well,
I just don't know if the numbers are inflated. That's all I'm saying. Could it possibly be these numbers are way overinflated and we need some type of audit before we just say yes?
Well, before Well, just like the redistatizing, they did the same thing with the bond. You know, they hold the meetings for us to come in and say what we want on these and what we approve and don't approve. But it doesn't do any good. It's just a dog and pony show. You know, we didn't want the golf course getting money, but it's in there. So from the beginning, the whole thing's wrong. So just like the redistatizing, if you don't fix it from the beginning, then you know it's out of your hands and this is a – but, yeah, it could be inflated or anything. But one of the questions I'd like for someone to bring up, what do they do with our tax money? I wish they'd show us where they spend that at. Do they show where they spend actually our tax money? Where does it go to? Because
well,
I thought tax money was for the infrastructure and stuff.
Okay, so explain the bond taxes. The bond taxes, are we talking about a loan or are we talking about tax dollars? So how do we get this money?
Bond's a loan, and in short.
Okay,
I mean, you go ask at the bond meeting, they'll give it to you in a long way, but in short, what I understand, it's a loan with interest. And if we can't pay for this stuff with tax dollars.
The loan has to be repaid, right?
So I'll tell you what, I'm going to pass that over to James or Adrian if he's on here, someone that knows a little bit more about that. But,
Adrian, what are your thoughts, though? Because if you're talking about a loan, you're still talking about passing on debt to the taxpayer, right?
Well, Kara, I begin, like you said, with the first proposition. Was it mobility, streets repairs, this, that, or the other?
What?
Think about this. Anytime somebody want to sell you something, they got to put something in there that catches your attention. Something that you are less reluctant to question. It sounds good, like they threw libraries in there. People are less likely to fight against libraries. They threw something in there for police, and people are less likely to fight against anything for law enforcement. They threw in there parks and recreations. You know, the catchy stuff. It's just easy to throw that stuff in there because people are less likely. Oh, they're really trying to. They thinking about us. But let's start with the street repairs and mobility. I would say it should be a concentrated effort. You go to the areas that are lacking the necessary infrastructures when it comes to mobility, this, that, or the other. And because when I think about mobility, I'm thinking about y'all make more sidewalks and more access for people who, you know, use wheelchairs, this, that, or the other. But I would go back to the northern sector. If areas that are already currently operational doing pretty good, then go to the northern sector, the sector that they're really trying to get built up. So I think you can cut into that balance and just focus what do you need in the northern sector, the area that you're trying to build up, because I'm sure every area doesn't need these mobility repairs or will fit the criteria for the mobility repair because it's how the neighborhoods are made, you know, or the areas are structured, you know. So beginning with that first proposition, that's what I would look at, the northern
sector. Well, I'm going to tell you what I saw. With Proposition A, basically, yeah, that deals with streets and mobility-related projects. When I talked to the city secretary, I asked for a breakdown of what that included. Well, when she gave me the breakdown, it basically deals with arterial. If you're not familiar with arterials, I looked that up, and basically that's like through streets. So they're talking about intersections, sidewalks. And then the thing that caught my attention, bicycle facilities. They're trying to basically ask us for $6 million for bicycle facilities. Now, in my neighborhood, I don't see any bicycle facilities, and the only person I ever saw riding a bike in Fort Worth really was our past mayor, our former mayor. So I'm trying to figure out who's asking for $6 million for a bicycle facility, and where is it going to be located at? Is this for the children or is this for adults? Because it does not seem practical. Then it went on to say safety
right.
and improvement. Huh?
Mm-hmm. No, you're right. And like you said, it's not reflective of all communities because all communities and people are not biking. So, what are you? So you got a good point on it in that aspect.
See, because you know, I don't know if most people know, but the New World Order, if you pay attention to it, it includes bike trails. For anybody who don't know, and I don't want to go this deep, but I'm going to go here real quick. The New World Order deals with bike trails and basically. If you pay attention all over the city, you'll see bike trails, but not a lot of people are riding bikes. Well, that's because the New World Order anticipates the gas prices are going to go so high at some point that you're going to get out of your vehicles and you're going to get on buses and train and you're going to be riding bicycles. So this stuff that they're asking for, even though it seems like outlandish, it's because it's lining up with the New World Order. But In my opinion, we're crazy to sign on to $6 million for a bike trail when we don't need them right now, and it's not I'm just not willing to pay for in the future right now. I mean, it may be necessary down the road, but right now I don't see a need for a bicycle facility at a cost of $6 million. The second section of the Proposition A deals with safety and improvement. That's neighborhood school safety. They're saying $6 million. I don't even know what that's about. Are we talking about painting a crosswalk? What do you call the little sections where the kids cross the crosswalks? I mean, I don't know what that would include for $6 million. A high injury network focused Vision Zero program, another $5 million. I don't know what that's about. Bridges for $10 million. Street lights at $12 million. Really?
Where?
That's what I'm saying. Exactly. Exactly.
Where? Bugs are expensive. They have those long life bugs that last forever. They're very expensive. No, I'm just kidding. Go ahead.
Well, I'm just trying to – it's not making sense because what I know about most of this construction stuff, and you all have seen it, other people have seen it in other cities, it's mostly Hispanic. And we know that those Hispanic contractors are not charging them these kind of prices. And so I'm just trying to figure out – there's a lot of fat. I'm just saying, do you agree? Am I wrong?
That's good, Carrie. Yes, that's a good observation because the point I want to speak to – I want to let you get much – you know, through the issue, then I'm going to bring up a good point regarding that, the contract. So that's good, Kay. That observation is real good.
That's true. Because most of the contractors you'll see are people that they're taking advantage of for the most part. I'm just saying. The next section was to maintain and improve network. That's established corridors. I don't even know where those are, $15 million. Traffic signals, they're saying another $15 million. Neighborhood street rehabilitation, $81 million. So my question is, where are they getting these estimates from? Because I just question if these aren't really inflated costs. And I know that building materials and everything has gone up, but did they really pad these numbers before they gave them to us? And,
right.
You know, yeah. What are your thoughts, Adrian? Go ahead.
No, I was just saying, what you're speaking in reference to again is just like, I'm like, where are y'all putting all this? Where are you going to put all this new infrastructure? Because a lot of school zones don't require it. A lot of school zones are in areas that are already, you know, the space is already just what it is. You can't do no more within that space. So, like I said, they had these meetings. They know what they're doing. They throw certain things out there to catch people's attention because people will not, you know, go in there and just say, oh, they're trying to make improvements. Vote yes, because it sounds good. It sounds good to the ear. It sounds good to the ear. So nobody questions it. But, like, let me just go, I was about to throw this out there. My question is, who are getting these contracts? And not only that, how many people that are getting these contracts had contributed to any of these political campaigns? And what kind of – these are just basically like a kickback. So you donate to my campaign, you support me. We'll make sure once we pass this bond that your company or any company that you know somebody has that you're linked to, we'll make sure they get some kind of contract. It's like just kickbacks. It's just like kickbacks. Disguised as improvements for kickbacks. Disguised as improvements for the city, making the city better. And people are getting sucked in by it. That's why I say they throw in parks. They throw in the library. They throw in the police department. They throw in the street. They throw in all this because this stuff sounds good. We've been voting to this. Year after year, we vote this stuff in because it just sounds good. It sounds good, but what's really behind it? These kickbacks, these contracts. Once you start giving out contracts, who's going to chase down contracts to see who's getting a contract?
True. You know, I'm going to tell you something. I wanted to know more about how they came up with these lists because I was like, okay, you know, these numbers are so big. Like, how did they come up with, you know, what items they were going to put in this bond package? And it says, how are the project lists developed? Now, these are the people that determine what goes on the list, y'all, and I didn't know this until I did the research on it. The city council input and recommendation. That's one group. And then input from neighbors and residents.
Now, question is, when did I get a chance to say what was going to go in the bond package? I mean, where was – I know Bob said something about they allowed us. Where was this at? You got to go to the meeting, though, right, in order to tell them, right? Is that what you're saying? Is that what you said, Bob? Okay, Bob keeps muting himself.
Who are you speaking to? I'm sorry.
I'm speaking you. How do they determine about who gets to write what about what goes in the bond package?
Well, we're supposed to, but they didn't. You know, they just took a dog and pony show. And I'm with Adrian on that other same thing there. I've thought about this a lot, and I know when I look at the agenda and all these contracts and those millions of dollars, you know, the library can be good. Some of these things can be good, but the problem I think with them, they're probably inflated, though. That's the problem. We're paying more. We'd probably get the same thing for a lot less if we had a legit government in, and the same thing with overpaid employees, which I think James is going to touch on that. But that's something that I file charges on. That's how they're getting the corruption in, like Michelle Good getting a $20,000 raise in 8 months. Inflated employees, inflated contracts, and kickbacks. That's exactly. And I see that on there, but I don't want to look at it because my plate's so full, and my ulcers already got ulcers. So I know right now to carve out one thing, and look, I think he's spot on about that, though. I'm sure there's plenty of kickbacks and plenty of people getting the money under the table in different ways. Family members, you know, like Kate Granger and them getting contracts and stuff. So it's a cesspool of corruption. It really is.
I think you're right. And I think they say data collection and analysis. Where are you getting the data? Where you collected it from? They also say master plan and strategic goals that are updated on a regular basis. Don't know what you're talking about. Development activity in the city. Okay. And then they go on to say projects that were on the 2018 list but weren't funded. So I guess whatever didn't get funded in 2018, they just drag it onto this list and add it to it. Service demand. And then the last thing they said, board and commission input. So in my opinion, this is something when we're having the city council meetings, we should be talking about at the city council meeting. To me, this is that type of item, not at some private or some meeting that may be in a community where somebody can't get to because they're working or whatever. I just think there's a lot going on here that does not make sense. But that's how they derive at what goes on the list.
Well, we went to the meeting, some of them, and we protested whatever, you know, but it didn't do no good. They just hold them so they can say they hold those meetings, that's all. And you do know,
right.
Or I believe last time I checked or whatever, I believe, you know, we're in debt to three different bonds. And as soon as one is paid off, that's when we open up another one. So they keep us at the maximum debt. There's three. Last time I checked, it's been a few years back, we were paying for a bond in 14 and 18 or whatever, how far apart they were, and we're starting a third one, you know. So when one's paid off, we still got two going, and we bring in, we stay at maximum. I think that's where we're at, maximum. So I don't like that either.
This is great. We're going to go to the phone line, 254-230. Good evening. You're on Let's Talk Fort Worth.
Hi, Carrie. This is Tara Wilson. How are you?
Fine, Tara. We were waiting on you, lady. On the phone.
I've been outdoor knocking.
You've been, listen, that's a good thing. Mr. McBride is on the phone line, too. So both of you all, and James, I'm opening up your phone lines, both of you all are running in the city. So District 4, Ray.
Correct.
So really we would love to know a little bit about you all, your background, basically what, you know, drew you to participate in this race, and tell us a little bit about your platform.
Sure. So I'm Tara Wilson. I live in Woodhaven. I am an ER nurse full-time. Other three have a small business. And so basically what got me to run for city council was I was frustrated just like everybody else and realized that it didn't take that many special credentials to run for city council other than, you know, being willing to, learn and be willing to do the work, but really to care about people. And what got me here was being locked out of City Hall and being confused as to why the city didn't want to hear our voices after the death of Tatiana Jefferson. And I was fundamentally confused. Like, why don't they want to listen to us? There's all these people out here locked out before COVID, And they're all scared and confused, and they want to know what happened. And why wouldn't city council create space on the agenda to hear their concerns? Or why won't they let us in the building? That was in the fall of 2019, and so that led me kind of down this road of, like, what is city council? What do they do? What's their job? And so as I started getting more and more answers and started getting involved with local organizations and saying, like, we need new people to run, I'm thinking, yeah, we do, you know, and I'm looking around and found a mirror, and a little voice said, yeah, it's you. You should run. And so, you know, with my special skill set in the ER, being in that kind of very high stress situation where, you know, every decision is important. We don't really get to ever make the wrong one. And knowing, you know, the all of the ins and outs of that and working with different people and personalities and on deadlines and on schedule, you know, I feel like that skill set bodes very well for this position. You know, as COVID came and hit, I was out in the front lines, COVID on the front lines, and knew that even through COVID, while our current council person was telling people, you know, that they weren't going to get sick from COVID, he got it himself, and then told us basically that we weren't going to get a budget town hall meeting because no one ever goes, and it's a waste of city staff's time when everything was virtual. It was really kind of everything culminated. So I was like, I have to run. Like, I have no reason I can't run. And so that led me to running last year. I ran in this race against the incumbent. We only came short, about 60 votes short of forcing a runoff. And as a brand new candidate, no known person. And so I knew that my message resonated with the District 4 residents and the voters in District 4, and really had set out to grow myself and get, you know, bolster my leadership skills and maybe even soften some of my edges that I carry in the ER. Just a little bit, business is conducted a little different there. And so I did that, and I started, you know, Leadership Fort Worth Leading Edge program, for Executive Business Leadership Program. And then, of course, in the fall of last year, I heard, you know, Kerry was stepping down, and we were going to have a special election for the same race that I ran less than 5 months ago. And so it was a no-brainer that I had to get back in and do it again. And so here we are now.
Wow. Mr. McBride, same question. James McBride? Okay.
Sorry, I'm sorry. It was on mute. I didn't hear you. Sorry about that. Thanks, Kerry, for inviting me on tonight. And Bob and Adrian, I look forward to talking to each of you. And Tara, it's good to talk to you for the third time in 2 days. But my name is James H. McBride. I am a candidate here for the Fort Worth City Council District 4 special election. I am a God-fearing, born-again Christian that was raised here all my life in Tarrant County. I went to school after a 30-year career inside the restaurant hospitality industry and graduated from Texas Tarrant County College, sorry, in 2019 with an Associate of Arts. And then I subsequently went on to Texas Wesleyan University, where I graduated this summer with a Bachelor of Science in Mass Communication and a minor in Political Science with Departmental Honors and Summa Cum Laude designation. Since then, I've done some consulting work for a nonprofit here in Tarrant County called Focus that essentially deals with promoting civic engagement and literacy inside communities. I also am currently the Sports Information Director for Texas Wesleyan University, which means that I am responsible for the promotion, the media, and the brand management of all 22 sports that are on the campus, which encompasses about 1,500 student athletes. And one of the reasons I got involved in politics was, this is my second race too. In 2019, I put myself on the ballot to run for mayor. And the reason I ran in that election was totally different than the reason I'm running in this election. And in the first election, I got involved because I saw that we had a Republican in Betsy Price running, and then we had a Democrat in Deborah Peoples that was running. And I figured that municipal politics should not be about ideology. It should be about the betterment of the community. So I entered that race because I am an independent, and I believe that we, when it comes to municipal politics, that we should be free thinkers about everything. I don't think we're going to be able to accomplish the goals we need to inside of Fort Worth because we have too much of a two-party mindset, and that's really what dominates everything in our political society at all levels. That's why I think this makes this race an important race to get into and try to win. As far as the priorities in my platform go, my number one platform is the most concern I hear, and it deals with property taxes. And I think I've got a plan that is a great business-style approach to try to help people with the relief of property taxes. Another leg of my platform is also I believe that we need to have 21st-century police reform. We've had a police monitor for 2 years, and we've had nothing that's of quality come out of it. And then lastly, I believe that we should use educational opportunities to hopefully expand economic growth inside the city of Fort Worth one day.
So how do you plan to implement all that, make it happen?
Well, it just depends on which one you're talking about. I mean, do you want to pick one? It would take me a long time to talk about all three of them.
Oh, well, let's talk about your last one, and let's talk about that. How would you make that happen?
Okay, and the last one I talked about was the economic growth through educational opportunities. And what do I mean by that? I think that if I'm a city council member, even though the Fort Worth ISD is separate from the Fort Worth City Council, I believe we need to find a better way to work with the Fort Worth ISD, and especially inside the high schools that are inside the communities here. And we need to find ways to expand their vocational programs that are there. Now, I know this is also going to take some help from the private sector to do something of this nature. But the key thing is that a lot of people drop out of school because they've got to decide between a job or if they're going to be able to get an education. And by expanding the vocational programs inside of these schools, we've got an opportunity to give all these young individuals a chance to get a high school diploma. And in addition to this, they're going to be able to get a skill that is going to help them make a living wage when they get out of there, and they're not going to be another burden on society for something, or they're not going to have to have somebody else help out with everything, because people being independent is something that is very important to all of us as individuals. And I believe that if we're able to do this program and make this happen, then if we take that, we can human that leverage that human force that we have there, and then we'll be able to leverage it for economic development in the future.
Tara, tell us a little bit more about your platform and how you plan to make it happen if elected.
Yeah, sure. First and foremost, my most biggest concern is just creating access and engagement with our communities. I mean, District 4 has been historically not part of decision making when it comes to City Hall. We have somebody grandstanding to us, telling us, we got it taken care of. Don't worry about it. Oh no, we don't need to have meetings with you. Your input's not important. And so, I mean, literally the district, minus maybe a few key neighborhoods up in the north, really have not had any focus, and they haven't been able to be a part of any type of decision making or planning. Everything is given to them and told to them what they need or what's coming to them, and they're fed up. I mean, here's the thing: is District 4 is so huge, and it's so diverse. You've got a big portion of it that's suburban, higher socioeconomic class, down to those in the East Side Urban Core within the Loop, that are working class people. But the one thing that runs through all of them is that they all feel like ignored and neglected and left out, from far up north in Heritage, from all the way east down in Meadowbrook and Ryanwood. They all feel left out. East feels neglected for not having any type of investment, no type of focus, and just being completely left out. East Side, again, in the 2022 bond, is getting no money from that. There are no projects outside of Gateway Park that are getting money over here on the East Side, and it's ridiculous. So there's that one. Two, investment, right down into investment. Investment for infrastructure. So, again, everything inside the Loop for District 4 has been completely neglected for the last 6 to 10 years. They don't get any input, and no money gets funneled down here. And we can go down – if you go down the itemized list for this 22 bond, almost none of that money is coming inside the Loop. Part of it's going to Gateway Park, which is great because we do need open green space conservation, and we need to have a park for this whole region for families to go to. But nonetheless, we have plenty of streets over here that need help. We have areas with no sidewalks. Again, that part. For the north, the infrastructure and the traffic is ridiculous. They didn't plan it very well. Anywhere you go north of, as soon as you get past I-30, going north to Fort Worth, you do not like your drive. It is miserable, coming out or coming in. And then all that traffic spills over onto like Riverside and Beach Street. up in the north part of District 4 onto Basswood in Western Center. And so, again, you know, the infrastructure part of that. And then, you know, another focus on small businesses. You know, our small businesses haven't really gotten any kind of assistance or help. They've been on it all on their own. I intend to, from the district office, to really be advocating for them, whether they need to learn how to get certified to be able to bid on contracts in the city, whether it is to give them actually more information about the bidding. You know, that if we had a small business bid on a contract, they have to file a FOIA request to figure out who won the bid. It's not even a public announcement for who even won that bid. And it's just crazy. Like, why do we need a FOIA request on a supposed to be a public contract that uses city tax dollars to fund it? And then again, more access engagement. I plan to be fully in the community. What made me late tonight is that I was out knocking doors and I was at a door speaking to somebody because they had something to say to me. And so I was not going to rush them. I knew that this would be on. You told me the first hour. So I made that timeline, but I was literally out knocking doors right before I got onto this phone with you. And that's my commitment because I plan on staying in the community no matter what.
Wow. Adrian, Bob, do you all have a question for Tara or James?
Go ahead, Adrian.
I will begin with just saying kudos to the both of you for offering yourselves up for service. I know Tara said she jumped in the race last year, and I think James, he spoke to his previous, jumping in. And so I was one of the – hey, I feel y'all on it. I was one of the people over here in District 3 who jumped in a race, you know what I'm saying, now I have a better understanding for how things work, and I'm here to say, you know. So I say kudos to both of you for offering yourselves up for service. I would say this. I'm not a part of District 4, but from what Ms. Tara said, it seems like y'all council member has been very incompetent. And I think he should have stepped down the first time he got that first driving under the influence offense. But again, you know, he got a slap on the wrist or whatever, however you said, you know, just brushed over. So it sounds like he's been very incompetent. So I'm glad he's stepping down removing himself from the process. But I would say this as a councilman, I want to encourage you to, if either you are elected, my question, well, I don't have to, it seems like you two will be in support of one another. Can't speak to the other person that's not here because we kind of like, it's like a fix-in on that other candidate. It's like a fix-in. So I would say this, I want to encourage you both to know that people are watching and they're hoping for change, you know, somebody to sit in that seat that's going to, like you say, represent the people and not just business interest or those who seem like they can kind of wheel and deal the council members according to how they want to do it. And we know policing, the POA, I'm going to let you all know, I'm pretty sure you both are aware that the POA, if you don't vote according to how they feel you should vote, you're going to get a target put on your back. So be prepared to vote your conscience. Be prepared to vote, for the will of the people. Don't be a candidate that's going to just vote up, yes and no, yes and no. Because I get tired of seeing it week in and week out. We get the council members, they just vote yes, no, yes, no, yes, no. It's never nobody that just says, let's continue this. Let's get this more time. It's always a one-way vote. So I'm hoping that you two will just be your own person. That's what I'm encouraging. Just be your own person and let the people know that you're there to serve them and not, yourself. So kudos to you. Kudos to you.
All right. Bob, you got a question for James or Tara?
Or Tara? Yeah, I do. I want to appreciate – I thank Tara for coming on, and I've got to say that is the first step for any candidate in my book is at least come on and talk to the people. And that's a big step no matter what. I know in some places that I'm not on the same page with Tara in some places, but that does not mean that she's not right or I am. I respect her for coming on here very much. One of the questions I wanted to ask, and it slipped my mind here just for a minute because I went back to thinking what James has said about Mr. Moon, the candidate getting away with all he's got, and he's in Spain right now partying. So I don't know how he gets away with that too. And that's what I was thinking of when I was talking about that. But the question I guess I want to put forth, if I can, it's so funny how I can sit here before I push that line to come on It's right there in front of my head. But as soon as that phone comes on, it sprouts wings, flies off my shoulder, and goes away. It'll come back here in just a second. But I had a good question for both of you. I wanted you to answer. Oh, that's it. Okay, it's coming back around. Here it is. Tara, we'll start with you. The same question here. What is your opinion of a council member as a job? Do you think a council member should lead, make all this, they're elected to be a leader to do this stuff, or are they elected to add, to suggest and give opinions, but actually do what the people say at the end of the day, whether they council member agrees with the people, but will go with the majority of people regardless? Do you think that way, or do you think the council member should, even when the council member doesn't agree with the people, should the council member be the type to go ahead and make that decision on their own? And did that make sense? It's the same question I'm going to ask James, too. Did that make sense, Tara?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Well, I very rarely do that, okay? So go ahead.
Let me frame it this way. Okay, so in the ER, we can have 5 patients that come in with a complaint of abdominal pain, nausea and vomiting. They have belly pain. It started, 2 days ago, and they have nausea, vomiting. So the process to get to the answers is, you do a assessment, you get their history, try to figure out, if there's specific health problems that address them, and then that's when the deviation starts in the care of all these patients, these 5 people that presented with the same problem. Then they all have a unique medical thing, and so the path starts deviating about plan of care. And then you draw labs. You do some simple, treatments that pretty much universally everybody gets. And then when their labs come back, you get more information. And then from that information, it gives you another key piece on how you're going to treat their specific abdominal pain according to whatever they have going on. And so I say all that to say that I think it depends. I don't think that you can just say, I'm only going to be this one way. Me, I think everybody's pretty aware, and if you haven't gotten this piece, I'm very community-oriented, and I'm for the, and I'm for people who support our tax base. And so guess what? That's every single person in the city. And so I'm very about amplifying that voice, but also I also believe that city council is supposed to be visionary, and we have to think about the future in mind, like the bonds, right? We vote on a bond, but we don't even see the byproduct of a bond until 3 or 4 years later down the road. And as y'all were discussing as I was coming on, there's stuff that gets voted on a bond, but due to overspending or whatever timelines, it gets pushed to the next one. So it's even more time. And so I think that it's just a matter of you being willing to take on whatever this issue or discussion or thing is, and evaluating all of it. And it's like, do we need to be doing this for the future of mine? And maybe people aren't able to have that vision. And this is something that, where can we find the compromise? Or is the community right? And this is not going to serve them. This is not something that they need. And they're obviously saying that they don't want. So I can't vote for this. So my answer will have to be no. And I want to kind of piggyback on the police thing that he brought up all ago. I can tell y'all unequivocally right now that I would be a fourth no on that $50 million grant for whatever equipment they're trying to get. I mean, my challenge to the POA is, how about you go find a $50 million grant that gives us more police officers? Because that's what we need. We need to go find money to get more of those, and also figure out a better plan of how to better, have them spread across the city, because that's the problem, is we just don't have enough people. And guess what? It's the same thing in the medical field. There's not enough nurses and there's not enough doctors, and so we're all running thin. So instead of spending that money on this piece of equipment that sits in a garage, how about we actually spend it on people? Because I just it's frustrating. Obviously, myself, and I don't want to speak for James, but neither one of us are endorsed by the POA. I'll never be endorsed by them. But Bob, yeah, back to your question, it's just a matter of, I believe that I can't sit here and tell you how I will act every single time. What I can tell you is, from my training and what I know, is you got to take every situation and assess all the parts of it, and then you make the best well-informed decision. And of course, my heart always leans towards people, but that's just who I am, though.
I appreciate that. That's a very honest, straight answer. Okay, James, you same way. Do you think you're take over and make the right the decision over the people, or should you go with the majority of the people on an issue?
Bob, that's a very simple question for me to answer for you. I think the first thing we need to do is we need to have our listening ears on, and we need to listen to what the constituent of this district want us to do. At that point in time, then it's upon us on what we want to do with what we heard from our constituents. And as far as it goes for me, if I'm elected on city council, I plan on taking a holistic and pragmatic approach to handling any of these problems.
All right.
Gotcha.
I appreciate it. Okay. Well, Carrie, I'm going to throw it back to you.
Okay. You know, Carrie, you said neither of you were endorsed by the POA, and that's accurate. I believe the Fort Worth POA endorsed Alan Blaylock. That said, if down the road the Fort Worth POA decided to endorse you, my question to both of you is, would you all accept a campaign donation? Either of you can start.
Do you want me to go first? I can go first. That's fine.
Sure.
To be honest with you, Carrie, the POA is never going to come to me and give me an endorsement. The platform I have for the sensible police reform, there's no one in the POA that is going to back that at all. So, no, they would never support me.
Mm-hmm. But the question is, if they did, would you take the funds?
But they're never going to support me because of the way I believe and what I think needs to be done. So, no, they're not going to do it. And they're never going to come to me. That's the plain and honest truth about everything, and that's the best way to answer that question.
Okay. Tara, same question.
Yeah, no, I never will. Here's the thing. I am union endorsed. I am AFL-CIO backed. So I believe in unions. But the problem with the POA is most unions, let's say an electrician, for example. If the union found out that they had a shoddy electrician doing jobs, they would go grab that electrician and be like, hey, what's the problem? What do you need? Here's some more training or whatever. This is the protocol. And then if they didn't get on board so that they were giving good quality work, the union would kick them out, right? But that's not how the POA works. That's not that they're like the only union that doesn't make sure that all of their members are operating at the highest standard possible. And I want to make it very clear, I on the ground, when I see my police officers on the ground, I talk to all of them, and they're a lateral colleague of mine. I mean, we encounter them in the ER. You know, they bring patients to us. I know how difficult their job is. They know how difficult our job is. Same thing for fire. We're all lateral colleagues. So, like, I know from a very, very special standpoint how hard their job is. Also know that there's a human being behind that uniform, and I have a lot of friends who are former police officers that are retired now or that in lawsuits right now that are tried to stand up to do the right thing, and they got cut down or they got, you know, retaliated on. And so I just want to tell my police officers on the ground that I got your back. If you're trying to do the right thing and you're just trying to do your job every day and you did put your badge on to serve, I got you. I don't have to have the backing of the POA. That's a political thing I don't even care about. So, no, the answer will always be no, but I promise you I'm here to show up to find solutions to build bridges between the community and our police and really change the way that we even see police and the way that they engage our communities.
Mm-hmm. Adrian, I think you had a question.
Yeah, I just want the listeners to understand. This is we're not on here advocating for anything against police and law enforcement, because law enforcement is very much necessary. You know, we just basically speaking in reference to the POA and their tactics and how they choose to utilize their so-called power to intimidate and coerce and, you know, things of that nature. So I don't feel either candidate is against law enforcement or police. And I just want to put that on the record, because they could easily use this platform to use as a smear campaign. And that'll confuse voters who don't think for themselves. That'll throw them off to say, well, these people are against law enforcement, you know.
Right.
So for the people who are listening, who are concerned, this is not one of those discussions. But for the candidates, I was asked this question to Ms. Reese. She states she's been out, you know, knocking doors and, you know, trying to get people people engaged, you know, the more. Mr. McBride, where are you at on as far as your campaign and as far as, you know, the work you've been putting in as well?
I'm trying to do as much work as I can. It's a little bit harder for me because I'm the low man on the totem pole. But it's for me, my main strategy is trying to get in front of the right people to have the right people hear my message, because I believe the message I have is something that's fundamental. I believe that my platform that I have given is three things that need to be dealt with in this city. And if you listen to any of the candidates when they talk, they don't have solutions to solve their problems. They just have talking points to talk about the problems. But when you listen to me and my platform, I have solutions that will handle these problems. So it's just a matter of getting in front of people and trying to get your message out there is what it is, Adrian.
Okay, a quick question. Okay, because Miss Tara spoke. I'm going to say this. Miss Tara spoke to a possible. It was a possible. She had the last election. She was like maybe 60 votes shy for a potential runoff. So let me ask. I'm going to pose this question to both candidates. Y'all both have some great. I think you both serve great in this position. We need new counsel. If there is a potential runoff, where either you or the candidate is in the runoff, will the other candidate support the candidate that's in the runoff? Because we know that sometimes it takes somebody endorsing somebody else to get their voters on board with, you know, pushing them over the top the next go around. So will either you support each other if there's a runoff against the other guy, you know what I'm saying? Because we know the fix is kind of in right now, so. If there is a runoff, would either you support the other candidate, yourself?
Yeah, that's easy. My answer is yes. I don't want a regurgitation of the current councilman we currently have. So absolutely yes. And to Mr. McBride's police monitor concerns, that's definitely one of mine. I was actually quite involved in the hiring process when that was going on, you know, so it's definitely a specific interest of mine. It's just not – there's so many issues. There's a lot. But that we definitely share the same concern for that office. And really 21st century policing is a big old federal study that was done that I have read and studied as well. So we do share that. So, yeah, I would definitely support him. Again, I just want someone different in that seat.
Wow. Let me ask you all, we have a new council. Basically, they've been seated for now 8 months. There's a lot of issues, I will say. I don't know if it's a learning curve. Maybe they'll come out of it. I don't know. And it is what it is. It's just a lot of things going on that people are concerned about, I'll say that. So if you all want, or if you were elected to the council, what would you bring to the dais that is not already there? What would we see
Can I say that Mr. McBride did not answer the last question? I'm interested in his answer.
Okay.
I mean, that's a simple question for me to answer too here. As far as it goes for me, it's about getting through hurdles. When I look at this race here, because of the four candidates that are in there, I know it's going to end up going to a runoff. The question is, what kind of runoff is it going to go into? And as I said, I'm going to take a pragmatic approach and a holistic approach to everything I do. And if I'm not in that runoff on the 8th of May, then I'll sit down and listen to both of the candidates and what they have to say, and I'll make my decision from there. I do like a lot of the things that Tara said, and through the conversations we've had, I think me and her are going to have another conversation here pretty soon about some things. So we'll see. We'll go from there. But I don't want to jump in the hat and say I'm going to endorse somebody now and I'm not going to endorse somebody now, because my main goal is getting to a runoff in this race, because that's about where I believe it's going to go. And from that point, I'll branch out and try to think about other things. But I've just got tunnel vision right now.
Okay, that wasn't my question. That was Adrian's question. My question was that we have a new council in place now 8 months. A lot of them appear to be struggling and in somewhat of a learning curve. That said, if you – or Tara, whichever, are elected. If you were elected, if she was elected, what do you all bring to the council that's different from what we have up there now? That was my question.
I'll be free to answer that question for you too, Carrie.
Okay.
As far as it is for me, I mean, as I said, part of my platform is about having sensible tax reform, okay? And I'll say this about that part of my platform, is we all know as taxpayers here in the city of Fort Worth,
that they say they're going to lower our tax evaluation, and they're going to lower the tax rate, and then we look at our evaluations go up. Well, we know that rate goes down, but we still pay more taxes. So for them to sit there and say that to us in front of the dais, that's just basically politician talk. Now, what I do is what I'm different, okay? And I said this last night, and I firmly believe this, and I'm going to say this unequivocally again. If I am elected the representative of District 4, as soon as I am sworn in, I am going to turn to City Manager David Cook, and I'm going to hand him a letter. In that letter, it's going to say that we need to stop all hiring inside the city of Fort Worth unless it deals with fire, police, or another entity like 911 that's essential to our functioning. Then we need to look at those jobs and make sure that they can't be dissolved into other people's work that are inside these departments. And also we need to look to make sure that these jobs that are there, are they really needed anymore inside the city of Fort Worth. Something else we need to do, too, is a lot of times when these heads of these departments inside the city leave, we go looking for somebody that has a lot of experience inside the city that can come in and lead the new innovation that is inside the city of Fort Worth. But we all know that government costs big money. So is what I say is that we open up that process to business leaders inside of the community who've been successful in running their businesses and have them come in and have a chance to try to do something. And then the last piece of this puzzle is I believe that we need to do a forensic audit of all spending, because I believe once that's done, we'll see where a lot of the wasteful spending's done. But I also believe, too, that before a department gets its budget, they need to come in to the city manager and the council and prove that they need that budget. Now, what do I mean by that? I'm going to use this as a hypothetical here, but let's say we have the water department, and they've got a $1.5 million budget. Well, the next year when they come in, they're going to ask for a $1.75 million budget. Now, why are they going to bump it up and do this? Because they're going to say, well, there's raises, there's other costs that went up, and everything else like that. Well, every year, why don't we go in there and look at them to see what they need and how they need to use it? Because that way, we're going to be able to save money, and it's not going to be them bumping up every single time they need something from year to year.
All right. Sarah, same question.
Sure. So to answer your question, I mean, I think people who are following this race and following my last race know that with my win, I will fundamentally shift city council. I will be the first Hispanic Latina woman to ever serve on that council. I'll be the first queer woman to ever serve on city council. And you know, I'm a, you know, I don't, you know, I beat to my own drum, and I will be replacing a person who has been voting down partisan lines, being irresponsible, have lacking integrity and character. And I'm the very, very opposite of that. You know, I have a job that is vitally important to this community. I do not get to get it wrong, and I'm held to such a high standard, and that's just how I carry myself in life. You know, I'm also young, just like the rest, the last three of the city council members, so I'll fit in with the mayor and representatives from 9, 8, and 6. And so, you know, I think that the average age of Fort Worth, I think, is like 38, 37, 38 is where I sit. And so I know that my win will actually be very fundamentally, it will be felt immediately. As far as learning curves, you know, I think that, you know, there's no way to completely prepare for this position. There's so many nuances and things coming at you. You know, I think that they've all been trying to do the best that they can. And, you know, you've got to learn to not let emotions get the best of you sometime. But, you know, it's a hard job, you know, and that's not why everybody, you know, this. Not everybody's running to do this. and so, you know, I just hope that, you know, my whole goal is to just be effective. And to be fair, my whole life is pragmatic. The ER is pragmatic. It's about data. It's about what you have in front of you and making the best choice possible with the information you have on hand. And that's just pretty much my goal of being in that city council seat.
Gotcha.
Hey, Karen. Karen, I got it. Got it. Before your next question, I got a quick, just a quick observation regarding speaking to experience. I think experience came up in this discussion, so I just wanted to speak to experience regarding this current council. So we got Parker, Moon, Bivens, Flores, Beck, Williams, Nettles, Firestone, and Crane. Out of all of the names I just named, only Moon, Bivens, and Flores have continual experience. And what I speak to, what I'm seeing is they all started from the same place, and they've only gained this experience because they've been sitting in those seats
so long. So they've been sitting in those seats so long. So they've garnered the necessary experience to be, quote unquote, you know, council members. Now everyone else I mentioned, even Parker, they're fresh to this. Even with Parker serving under the former mayor in the time she did, she wasn't a mayor. She wasn't the mayor. She was chief of staff, but she wasn't the mayor. You know what I'm saying? And we know Beck. Everybody basically are fresh fish out the water. So I say this, read it. You both are qualified for the position. Your experience shouldn't matter. You both are qualified. You both can read, write. I always say read, write, and reading. What they say, reading, writing, reading, writing, and comprehending. As long as you can comprehend and read and comprehend and ask questions, trust me, the experience will come. So if experience is a question to either of you, throw it in the trash, because everybody, they all started from the same place and had to, they've only made it this far because they've been sitting in those, the three I spoke of, they've only made it this far because they've been sitting in those seats that long. So that's just my observation regarding experience. You both are qualified. So, okay, Carrie. Thank you, Carrie.
All right. One thing that I have noticed with this and the previous council is there appears to be a already set mindset when they come into council on these votes. And even though members of the public will go up in opposition of whatever the item is, the vote already, the outcome of the vote already seems to have been predetermined before they walked in. What I'd like to know from the two of you, if that is something that will change if you are seated, will you vote your conscience and not vote in block like what we see or seem to see happening today and with the previous council? We'll start with you, James.
Carrie, I think a lot of what you see with the block voting that's going on in the council now is a lot of that stuff's being hashed out in those work sessions and side sessions that are going on. That's just my opinion on that. But other than that, if you want to know if I'm going to vote or I'll do, I mean, I'm going to be vocal about anything that I disagree with, and I'm going to be vocal about anything that I agree with. That's the only thing I can do. I'm only one vote. There's eight other votes that are up there on that dais. But I'm like I said, I'm going to take a pragmatic and holistic approach, and I'm going to vote what my conscience tells me to do and what I think is the right thing to do for the constituents of my district after I hear what they have to say.
Okay. So, Terry, will you succumb to peer pressure if your conscience says no? You know, are you still going to be basically pressured to vote a certain way because everybody else, or feel pressured, I guess I should say, not pressured, but feel pressured to vote a certain way because everybody else is going to the left that you need to go to the left?
No, I mean, I'm a very independent person. You know, again, kind of to piggyback on what he said, a lot of decisions are hashed out in executive session and in work session, and not a lot of people pay attention to the work session. I mean, the bad part of the work session is that a public comment is not taken. It's you're able to watch it and see what's going on and how the discussions are being made. Not being a part of following the work session and understanding like the thread of how decisions are coming to be could also lead to you coming to the city council meeting and having the public comment where you speak up. I mean, honestly, like if you, for everyone listening, if you have an issue, you need to email and call your city council member, right? And then if they're not returning your calls or your emails, that tells you everything that you need to know. That's the bottom line. And so, yes, you can go down to city council and speak, but as you just alluded to, decisions are pretty much almost always made. Now, mind you, though, there is some time that it's very effective, right? When we're doing redistricting, you know, communities of interest and people who went down there over and over and over again and put it on record what they wanted for their communities, what they wanted, in regards to, like, Hispanic Opportunity District, making it known over and over again, this is what we want. You know, there are some issues that city council has no choice but to listen to, because then it'll be very obvious that they're going against what the city wants. So, you know, I you know, we can't discuss the executive session because it's legally, you're legally bound to not disclose that. But mm-hmm. again, I think I think everybody can get the sense from me that I will say what I need to say about what I want to say. I will be speaking up for my communities in District 4, for our neighborhoods, again, that continue to be neglected and be shut out. And I will be with them, and I'll be bringing their voice to the table saying, well, guess what? I talked to them, and they don't want this. So it doesn't need to go here. Too bad, so sad to whoever doesn't, you know, to like whatever. If it's a developer issue, I'm sorry. Maybe we can figure out a different plan and take it to them and see if they want it. But, you know, that's pretty much – I pretty much stand on – I will be a person of the people. And, you know, I think I admired, you know, Ann Zeta when she was on council. You know, there were a few times she stepped down and she voted no, and she was the only one. And there may be a time that she could have done a little bit more, but she was vocal about how she felt about things, and she voted no. And that was something I admired in her, you know, and I don't have any problem being the only one saying no. I mean, we got to stand up, and that's really what got me to run in the first place, is standing up and going, hey, what the heck? So that's not going to change.
Okay. Right now they have a raise on the ballot. You know, and in a lot of cases, I think most people feel like a raise is not a bad thing, but the amount that they ask for with such a short time on the council made a lot of people a little uncomfortable. Do you all support the raise as they're asking for, or do you feel like maybe they need to go back to the table and maybe ask for a little bit less and possibly get it to go through? James, we'll start with you.
As for me, I'm unequivocally against that. I don't believe there should be a pay raise. And here's the problem I have with it, Carrie, is the problem I have with it is the way that it's written, okay? Because if you look at it, it's indexed off the city employees, department heads, and what they make, okay? Now, as I talked about, government's bloated and it's inflated and everything. So we know these department heads are going to get raises eventually. Now, do you know what that means? That means that the city council is never going to have to come to the citizens again and ask them for a raise, because the raise is automatically going to be in there because of that index and when that index slides. So for me, I'm unequivocally against it.
Wow. Terry, your thoughts?
So, you know, I'm a working, you know, working class ER nurse. You know, I have been able to navigate my career to get me to a comfortable place in life, which is why I'm able to pursue this seat. And so, you know, but I am a single mother of three. You know, I've been fortunate that I've been able to do this. It's actually costing me money to run for city council in the last 2 years. Has definitely impacted my pocketbook. I mean, the bills get paid. Nobody goes hungry. I felt it. And so when I think about working class people in Fort Worth, which is a majority, I think the average income for a family of four is like $65,000 or something like that. I think about other single moms who maybe get fed up, right? And we know that moms are superheroes. They wear all kinds of capes and hats, and they make everything. They make the world run. And so I feel like in the future, if a single mom or say a family and a husband and wife, or a husband and a husband and wife, they all decide that, man, I think that you'd be good for city council, but the barrier that keeps them from running is the fact that it will literally bankrupt them to be able to serve in this position, or they won't be able to take care of their kids. I think that's a barrier that we need to remove, because here's the thing, is we get what we pay for, and if we keep it the way that it is, then we're going to keep getting the same outcome. This whole block voting that you say, it takes a lot for somebody. I would say I'm chingona. Like, I don't have a problem with being singled out. I've been singled out my whole life, right? So I'm okay with standing up and taking the heat. I'm ready to take the heat. I've been doing, you know, that's what I've been doing. The last year when I ran, I was nobody. I took so much heat for it, but I'm okay with that. But not everybody's built like me, right? So I want, you know, I want the demure, soft-spoken man or woman that decide that they want to run for this seat to actually be able to support their family on it. And there is no incentive, right? For somebody making $20,000 a year, there is no incentive for them to stick their neck out and get attacked by the media, by the public, by other council members, by a POA president going on and barraging them with all these media inquiries of calling them out that they're against the police. That's not an incentive for somebody to really come to bat for our communities, for your neighborhood. So you have to think about what you want. I'm almost done. And so I feel like I'm in support. Hold on. I'm in support of it, but for that reason, because in the future, that's what we need. And we're also not on par with other cities like Dallas or Houston or Austin that pay their city council for this position.
But, Tara, nobody is making anybody run for office. So it's not like a job in which, you know, somebody's making you go get in line to take abuse or whatever. It's one of those jobs that people sign up for because they want to be of service to their community. So, and this was my proposal.
Right. But who can, but even if they had the desire to, right, and they're working class, how will they be able to be in the position? It's a full-time job. Like, you have to have a supplemental income that supports you in the 60 hours a week that it takes to serve in this position. So when we're talking about people that actually care about their communities and being able to serve, those who meet the criteria to be able to support themselves, be effective, to stand up for what's right, that's a very, very short list of people. And we're not opening up the door to get diverse, well-qualified people in these positions because of the financial barrier that's in place and able to serve in this position.
Okay, Liz, let me ask another question. And Thomas, I'm going to open up your phone line. With the redistricting, and a lot of people have a problem with the redistricting because these new districts have been created and basically to put in position a person of the Hispanic race, let's just say that. So do you think that was fair, or do you think that's not fair? Should we really be basing who we want to put on council by their race? Do we really want to do that, or do you consider that to be fair?
Yeah.
Either of you.
Carrie, as for me, the way I see this is I don't have any problem with there being more diverse people on side the Fort Worth City Council. That's not a problem with me at all, okay? But the thing I don't understand while watching this whole process for me is that they wanted to have another Hispanic district that was majority Hispanic voting age in it. But this whole process wasn't done on race, as they say. But that really just seems like an oxymoron to me. I can't wrap my head around that. I don't understand that at all. Another thing that really strikes me about this is another situation inside the city of Fort Worth here. We'll recreate these boards and these panels and everything because we need them to help solve our problems. Well, what did we do with the one that was done for the redistricting? All we did is threw everything they had aside, and then we had the council members draw their own map, which that's a little bit problematic to me too. But the thing that was very interesting to me with watching this whole process is because I watched it as a taxpayer, and I also watched it as being a future council member too. And it was very interesting to see the members on council that weren't willing to budge and the ones that were willing to budge. So that's really what my opinions are on that.
Tara.
Right. So it's important to understand that the Voting Rights Act actually puts in place things so that communities of color aren't discriminated against. So on its face value, it's based on race. It's based on making sure that community colors aren't too compacted or cracked or being fracked, which is why that term gerrymandered comes into place. Fort Worth is majority Hispanic, 37% Hispanic population. We came out and said that, you know, they wanted a Hispanic Opportunity District because the city council is not reflecting the demographics of the city. They used multiple criteria to create that map. Communities of interest was a very, very another one that was very high on the list. We know that for District 4, for Como was adamant about ending up in District 6 with Black Councilman Jared Williams. Como is a historic Black community in Fort Worth, and they were tired of not being represented, and they were able to get that. And so I don't think that it's a problem because historically communities of color have been shut out, having to fight for their right to vote, having to every time that, you know, a new legislation was passed, the test to vote changed, right? And even these voter registration laws are more highly impact communities of color. And so, you know, the city was doing the right thing. They're following the Voter Rights Act and trying to get another Hispanic representative on city council so that those making decisions were reflecting the demographic of the city. And it wasn't the only criteria used. And so communities of interest was also used in that process. And so, no, I don't have a problem with it because that's literally why the Voting Rights Act was created.
Mm-hmm. Thomas Trolling-Kazi, your phone line is open.
Thank you. I came in late, so I apologize, y'all. I have maybe a slightly different perspective on the pay raise thing, and I think that it's about how they structured it and the timing. And so I probably lean a little closer to the way Tara sees it than, say, some of the more conservative folks. But this is where I think they made the mistake. They put two or three elements into one vote. So even if you're for giving them a raise, and even if it's supposed to be $40,000 or $50,000 or $60,000 increase, the fact that they take away the ability for the voters to approve future raises is problematic because it's kind of a chain of command or a leadership structure problem. And in addition to the fact that it's perpetually the city manager that indirectly gives the council a raise, that dynamic's upside down. Because now the city council becomes beholden to the city manager and the senior staff's recommendation on raises. And so, you know, because they're politicians and the folks that we've had in there for virtually forever, this is human nature, of course they're going to keep the same city manager and the same leadership. They're going to approve their raises because by default they get their own raises themselves. But one of the things that's possible, because I get the equity element, is if this measure is defeated on May the 7th, this council or a future council can reintroduce it as quickly as they choose to. And so, for example, we have elections all the time. The current raise, if it happens, would take effect in October. But the truth is that they could follow the rules and the state charter rules and reintroduce a raise of a fixed amount of money, let's say $40,000, $50,000, $60,000, up to, you know, some living wage number or above, and have it on the November ballot, which is going to happen anyway. And let me tell you why this helps.
Just 1 second on that. Thomas, can I step in there? I think they have to wait a year before you can amend anything on the charter again, because I tried to, and I was instructed that you have to wait at least a year. Okay? That's all.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, so then that being the case, I think that the measure is going to fail because it failed the last time. And I think they bit off more than they could chew. I also think that I call it an unholy alliance because the incumbents will stay in there and the city manager can't be replaced even with pretty bad performance. And I don't like some of the performances of the city manager because they're aligned with each other on raises. That's the tough part about it. Here's where I think some things that are more innovative that they don't do. They all have a staff assistant. Some of their staff assistants are quite able and capable, and some of them are a little fresh, okay? And the truth is that what's more practical and keeps work-life balance is to get better developed, broader staffs, two or three people, especially if they specialize in community engagement or in research or scheduling, so that there's enough people around them that they're not always in a 60-hour a week work cycle. That's a lot easier for the public to understand than, you know, a giant leap in pay. But what they probably should have done is not made it a forever raise scenario where you cut out the public's say on this. Because it's a council and mayor structured city manager organization, the city council loses a lot of its power and surrenders it to the city manager and staff because they've, you know, as far as making the city manager and every other department, including the police, accountable. I mean, part of the problem with police accountability is this city manager is deeply in bed with them. And so I hate the fact that it's a year before they can fix it, you know, but this is another one of their mistakes, I think, you know. I mean, that's a tough thing about this is, and I don't know who crafted this, but I'm going to guess it was David Cook's idea. And so, you know, even without this element, it didn't pass before. It lost pretty badly. On the redistricting thing, I mean, both these candidates are right. The worst part about this is, you know, all this, this is the perfect reflection of disrespect for the public, for committees, for commissions, for perfectly intelligent, equity-minded people that you bring in as volunteers, and then absolutely, to the greatest degree, for the most part, waste their time. I mean, even the conservative members of the council, the people they appointed compromised some. So did some of the more progressive people's, you know, appointees. And when you look at it, what the council does, and lots of, this is the nature of politicians. All of the things that they that can make them look good and get them reelected, they're going to stick their nose back into it. They're going to meddle with it. That's why the things that are distasteful or awkward, like let's say the Civil Service Commission, when a cop or a firefighter misbehaves, you know, it just happens to be that my nephew is the chairman of the Civil Service Commission here in Fort Worth. Well, they have to listen to all these outrageous things that cops and sometimes firefighters do and decide whether they should keep their benefits or their jobs. The city council is not going to step in and interfere on that because they don't want to touch it with a 10-foot pole. And so that's the problem, is they're totally okay with a Parks and Rec Commission or a Zoning Commission and all these other panels, but when it comes to something that impacts their ability to get elected, it's situational ethics. And that's what that's a big part of it. The other one is they spent so much time on it and interfered in the middle of the process so long that it makes them look foolish because there's way too much other business to take care of. I mean, they should have set it and forget it and for the most part should have accepted what the panel they had themselves appointed recommended to them. And what came out was a good outcome for Como and for the Hispanic Community with Opportunity District. And, you know, then we went through a whole lot of extra new nonsense because of politics. I mean, that's Thomas, the way I see that. And,
Thomas, we got the wine.
Gary, can I jump in here real quick to respond to something Thomas said? Thomas, if you realize, it is David Cook that did that because he is the main policymaker in the manager council system. Now, if we would switch the system like most other big cities are and go to a strong mayor format and the city council was the main policymaker, then yes, I believe they should get a raise from what the current rate is. But David Cook right now, because of the manager council system, he is the main policymaker and just city council implemented.
Yeah.
Thomas, do you have a question for them? Because we got to wind this up so that we can get to those other propositions before the hour is over. Do you have a question for either James McBride or Tara Wilson before we wrap this up?
Yeah, I think I have one, and hopefully it's not one they already got asked before I got on. One of you defeats is it Blaylock? Is that the guy's name? He's a police officer. If one of you defeats the police officer, how will the other one be helpful and supportive? I'd like to hear the answer from both of you.
That question was asked.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. Well, good. That's even better. But so what do you – I mean, the messaging here, and the problem is we don't want to divide forces, but this is where we're at. We need to get you to a runoff or an outright win, one of you, right? So what do each of you see are the flaws of this guy, besides the fact he's a POA person? I mean, we're already going to have Manny Ramirez on the county commissioner's court. I think that's horrible.
Okay, there's dead air. Somebody answers the question.
And for who don't know who Manny is the president of the POA, and it's his payoff for buying candidates. He's going to be on the mission. We place candidates in the city. We do not elect them because of Firefighter Association money and POA money and the Star Telegram just endorsing and not publicizing like they used to. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I think that question kind of put them in a pickle. And so I don't know if that's a smart way to answer. I mean, it's smart to answer that question, Thomas, because they are in a race.
I can answer it.
Okay. Go ahead.
I mean, to me, it's just he's chosen to be in that position. He's a regurgitation of what we already have right now. I mean, he's a nice guy, but I mean, again, we're still talking about the one neighborhood in the district that's pretty much gotten every resource possible and no one else in the district has really gotten any love. And so I just believe that I don't believe that he'll be able to operate in differently. And then, of course, being the union pick tells me everything I need to know. So,
yeah.
Okay, let me clear up something for anybody that's confused about what they're talking about. They're speaking up. Okay, first of all, let me be clear, because I don't want any confusion about what I did. I invited every single candidate that's running in District 4, and that would be Alan Blaylock, James McBride, Tara Wilson, and Teresa Ramirez. James McBride and Tara Wilson were the only two that accepted the invitation, and they're here tonight. Mr. Blaylock, I never heard back from, and Ms. Ramirez, I never heard back from. That said, they're speaking of Mr. Blaylock. Mr. Blaylock is currently endorsed by the Republican and the we understand Mr. Blaylock is currently on the Crime and Prevention Board for District 4. So some people feel that Mr. Blaylock may be downtown safe to win the race. So to clear up any confusion about if anybody's not understanding what they're talking about.
Yeah, well, so, hey, let me also add, he's Carrie Moon's HOA vice president.
Okay. I didn't know that.
So, again, you know, I don't have any problem saying it. I'm not attacking him personally. He's a nice guy. He's very – all four of us have been together. We were together twice yesterday. Again, nice guy, retired, you know. But, again, I can't support somebody that's basically the pick of the former council person who's still running around City Hall with an ankle monitor on his ankle. So my answer is absolutely not. Will not be supporting that person in anything.
Well, I'm free to weigh in on him. He owes me $140 for my sign coming down. So I don't have much respect for this man. I talked to him about that, and I offered a deal that if he paid to put my sign back up that he took up, had taken down, that if no one else takes my signs down, I'll repay him his money back, and he won't be out a penny, and he wouldn't even go that deal. So I don't know whether I want to put up more signs and they take them down or what to do about this, but he does not seem like a very good character man. He does not. You know, if he was a good man, he'd pay for that $140 and pay for that sign. He'd put the word out telling people, do not take other people's signs down. But he doesn't do that. So I have no respect for the man. Thank you.
All right, y'all. This is going south, y'all. Mr. Blaylock, I don't know you. I don't condone anything that I just heard, but, you know, I'm going to give everybody the right to have freedom of speech, but I don't know, y'all, if we got to be picking on one candidate. Okay, so thank you, Tara Wilson, and thank you, James McBride, for stopping by tonight. Can you, in 60 or seconds or less, tell people why they need to vote for you on May 7th? Tara, can we start with y'all? Got me nervous. Tara, can we start with you?
Sure, yeah. So, again, Tara Wilson, running for Fort Worth City Council District 4 in the special election. I've already been here one time before. I ran last year, only came up 60 votes short of fourth and runoff. So a lot of your neighbors have already chosen me for this position once before. My dedication to this job didn't change. I chose this job when it was the hardest during COVID, when there was an incumbent in the seat and I came that close. And so now I'm doing it again because I care about your communities, my neighbors, the neighborhoods, and us having a voice at City Hall, and that there's somebody in the seat that wants to hear what you have to say and what your concerns are. And every time I'm at a door with somebody, they hear me, they hear my passion for it, and they talk to me. And so that's why I'm here. You can find out more information about me at www.voteterawilson.com. You can follow me on social media across all platforms at Vote Tara Wilson. Please, if you have family that live in Woodhaven, White Lake Hills, Meadowbrook, Carter Riverside, Bonnie Bray, Park Glen, Summerfield, Heritage Trace, Heritage Glen, Crawford Farms, they all can vote in this race, and I ask for their vote. I ask for your vote. Early voting starts April 25th, and it goes all the way through May 7th. So please go vote.
Okay. James McBride.
Kara, first off, I just want to thank you for letting us come on tonight and talk and be able to be a part of your platform tonight. It's been a great honor to do that. But after we listen to everybody and they've talked as the candidates here, we're all good at describing what the problems are inside of our community. The only problem is the other candidates, they can't prescribe solutions. I've got a platform. My platform has common sense solutions to it.
I want to look at sales tax and have a business style approach. I want to look at property taxes and have a business style approach to tackling it. I want to have 21st century solutions to the policing problem we have here in Fort Worth. And then again, as I talked about earlier tonight, I want to leverage our relationship with the Fort Worth ISD and expand vocational programs so we can have economic development come to Fort Worth that's meaningful for everybody and gives everybody a living wage. Thank you. May God bless each and every one of you.
Thank you. There's a caller that just popped up. Let's see if he wants to talk to you all or if he's calling to talk about the proposition. Caller, typically we don't take a block number, but we're going to take you tonight. Good evening. You're on Let's Talk at Work. Hello.
All right. God be with you. This is Reverend Dusty Harper.
Hi.
Yeah, welcome. I got a question for the last guy calling who just was talking.
That was James McBride.
Okay. James, are you still there?
Yes, sir. I'm here.
Yeah, James called a blow-up doll for me last week and a couple of fuck bugs. I was wanting to know when I can get them back.
Excuse me?
Okay. Wait, say what?
James called some fuck bugs for me the other day and a blow-up doll. I was wanting to know when I can get them back.
You trolled him.
I have no idea what he's saying.
Okay. Thank you, troll, but we don't take those kind of calls. Okay, good evening, y'all. We're hanging up on him. I don't know what that was about, but we got some trolls tonight. Okay, again, listen, we're going to move on to talking about propositions. Now, Tara and James, if you all would like to hang out with us until we finish the show tonight, you're welcome to do that. We're about to talk about Proposition B through F that's on this May 7th ballot. Y'all, there's a lot going on. Proposition B deals with $123,955,000 for the Parks and Recreation Project, including a new aquatic center for Stop 6 neighborhood and a rebuilt Forest Park pool. It's $123 million that they want. I asked for a breakdown, and this is the breakdown that they gave me. Gateway Park Development, $8 million. Stop 6 Aquatic Facility, $8,200,000. Fort Worth Botanic Gardens, $7 million. Sycamore Park Development, $2 million. Oak Grove Community Park Development, $3 million. Stop 6 Hub Community Center, $17,500,000. I'm going to put a pin there, y'all, because I got to come back to that. Stop 6 Hub Community Center, $17,500,000. Meadowbrook Golf Course renovation, $7 million. Fire Station. Now we're gonna put another pin right here with Fire Station Community Center replacement, $11,575,000. And I put a pin there because further down the road in another proposition, we're also asking for money for fire people. So I'm just confused as to what we're talking about here. Also, we got Forest Park Pool Replacement, $11 million. Echo Lake Park Development, $5 million. Fort Worth Water Garden, $6,500,000. Heritage and Baddock Park Renovations and Site Improvements, $13,500,000. Fort Worth Zoo Utility Improvement, $3,500,000. Drainage, Dredging, Erosion Control, $7,500,000. And so... And there's two more on here, but y'all, I don't know that I believe these numbers. I just don't know that I believe these numbers. And I say that because I'm going to go back to this Stop 6 Hub Community Center.
I was thinking about the Stop 6 portion of it. You went through that was a lengthy list of things, you know, but I'm sure the people of Stop 6, that's not what they're asking for. The people of Stop 6, if anything, they need over there, they need some, what everybody always used as talking points, economic development. They really need economic development, something that's going to bring some employment opportunities for the area. They haven't even fixed the roads over there. As far as people having issues just catching city transportation because of how they don't mess up the road, the area over there. And they haven't even begun developing the new infrastructure that they had proposed. So get that done first. Why y'all – see, this is what I'm not liking. You're starting one thing and not finish it, and then you're trying to start something else. Who wants an aquatic
just aquatic thing.
Let me answer that question for you. Uh-huh. I can tell you who wants an aquatic. That's not going to be for the people who live there now. This is for future residents of Pool 6, if you ask me. That's just to answer your question.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Is that aquatic, one of them places, them little stand-around things that they do? They just walk up and stand around because you see they did the sycamore.
Aquatics is a swimming pool. They're talking about a swimming pool.
A swimming pool. Okay, okay, Carrot Street, they're talking about a swimming pool. We had a swimming pool called Sycamore Park Swimming Pool. But you know what they did with Sycamore Park? Open the predominantly Latino black communities. They closed it down because they said it was too costly. But what did they do? They paved over it and put up a little, I don't even know why they put that there, a little thing where kids just stand underwater. See, you might as well have left a swimming pool there. So they had a swimming pool for that area.
But see,
so like you said though, it's for what's coming new.
It's future.
Right.
And I don't know anybody who doesn't see that. Why would you put? I'm just saying it doesn't even add up. Why would you put a swimming pool in Stop 6 and then you put an $11 million community replacement center, community center replacement for $11,575,000? That does not sound like that's for the current residents. That sounds like that's for a future resident. And I beg to differ with anybody who says anything otherwise. I mean, Thomas, Bob, y'all agree? Something's not right here. The pool's going to cost $10 million.
Go ahead, Thomas.
Let me tell you what I see happening here. So there are council members, including some past council members that are already gone. When they started building this proposal, for a while, a number of council members, 3, 4, 5 of them, had an interest in recreation or parks and rec improvements for their districts. The city staff does is they, in other words, those are priorities for, I don't know which ones, but 3 or 4 of them. So the staff knows. We need to come up with projects, even if they're not projects that are highest priority for a few of the districts, so that we can dangle a big chunk of money to get enough winning votes from 5, 6, 7 council members. And so for the council members that are not focused on that, say, I think there's actually at least 2 right now that share Stop 6. I don't, doesn't Bivens and Nettles both have parts of Stop 6?
I think
so. Right. At any rate, to lock in votes to pass the entire bond, because it's an all or nothing vote, they have to pork barrel, basically. You know, it's like a localized version of pork barrel. A couple of those things are pretty big structures, like the $17 million outlay for Stop 6 or Sycamore Community is clearly a new building or a replacement type building. Kind of the way it happened in Como. You know, in Como, they had a community center for a long time, and it did get outdated. It was too small because those Como people are very, very active and organized, so they used the crud out of their facility, and that's a really good thing. So they built them a bigger, newer one, and the city has the other one kind of mothballed. And I suspect that's what they're planning on doing in Southeast Fort Worth. A couple of those things, you know, the ones named Fire Station or whatever, or Fire Station Community Center, so I know what that is. It's really close to me.
Okay.
So it's a tiny little park. It's a tiny little piece of land. It's big enough for a couple of gazebos and picnic tables, less than an acre, probably 3/4 acre, and children's playground equipment. And it's the reason why it's called Fire Station Park is right next to it is an old fire station that's not used by the fire department that's called Fire Station Community Center, but it needs to be renovated. It's going to be used for some public use. So I'm sure and by the way, it's not big enough for even a basketball court. So I'm not sure how much they're going to expand it or remodel it or whatever. But that's why those words pop up in the Parks and Rec budget. So,
I want to say real quick, regarding Stop 6, you know, there's no knocking on none of your points, Tommy. A lot of what Stop 6 has been needing, they could have been implemented over years ago because now they're doing it, but now the people who the communities belong to, the residents of Cowell Place, Stop 6 is known for being historic. It's known for being historic. It's known for its Dunbar, you know, Dunbar things, whatever, this, that, or the other. And then it was Cowell Place, you know, Cowell Place, the Calvert Place community. I don't like calling it projects, you know, that's just an ugly name. The Calvert Place community, you know, so that was kind of like, I guess that became a what you call that, a sore thumb for the city, you know. Okay. So what they did was they uprooted all of those families, and they just let them just, they just dispersed throughout the city, wherever, you know. I'm pretty sure some areas rejected them, but they dispersed throughout. But what I'm saying is these community centers or whatever it is that was going to make the community better, they should have been done it, you know, because I'm pretty sure a lot more young people's lives would have been not thrown away because, you know, because of the inadequacies they didn't have. So, but to your point, it's nothing knocking regarding your point, but, yeah, Stop 6 has been needing, you know, structure change, but my thing is why now, you know? Why now? And then, like Kerry said, it's because they want to make it look good for the future, you know? It's,
Well, I can lay in here just a little bit on that. But Stop 6, Como, a lot of areas need change, but I'm going to have to go with what James said, and I think this is one of the key things, is to get involved with the schools, and I think it's going to take a matter of time to really change, because we can do anything. I have enough people in my community alone to win this district race if they all voted, in my community alone, if they all voted, but they don't. Very, very few vote, okay? And the few that do vote don't really care about us. So that's why we're losing out. So I think we've got to get people involved to vote. And we can do anything. We can control any council member, any mayor, once we get the people involved to vote. And getting them involved, I'm finding, is very hard to do. So I'm with James about, we need to start reaching to those elementary school and try to grow another crop out. So when they come out of high school, that they think that voting is an obligation, not a privilege. Also, they learn who their council member is, their mayor, and their district a little bit. That's somewhere in their early age, I think, needs to be planted in their mind to start changing this thing around. And it's a long-term thing, is the way I see it, a long-term. I don't think it's anything we can change overnight. But, yeah, Stop 6, a lot of areas need it. But actually, Stop 6, to control the whole voting area if they all voted. But they don't. Yeah. You know, it's very few people vote, and I think that's the key to it. And how do we get them to wake up and say how easy it is if you just take time to exercise your right and just learn a little bit and vote? And that's what I think is the key. No, that's my point.
Well, I think this. I think what happened with the Como Community Center and what's happening with these upgrades that they're making in Stop 6 with this aquatic center and this community center, I don't think it's about the current residents. I think it's about gentrification is coming in the future residents. That's just my point. Okay, I'm going to tie in this Stop 6 and Community Center replacement for this $11,575,000, this under Proposition B, with what's under Proposition D. So I'm going to skip C for a second. We're going to skip to D. Proposition D deals with for police and fire public safety facilities, including proposed headquarters for the new Northwest Patrol Division. Okay, that said, they're asking for $39,321,000 for that. So why isn't what we're looking for with this Fire Station Community Center included in this $39 million? So we're asking for $39 million in Proposition D for police and fire safety, but also in Proposition B, we're asking for Fire Station Community Center replacement at $11,575,000. That's a lot of money. That's a lot of money.
Yeah.
So something's not right with these numbers. I'm just going to say something's not right with the numbers. That's just me.
Well, to Tara's point, and I'll be brief, to Tara's point, I would say that's fine and dandy, but can we get the officers first? You don't even have the officers.
Yeah.
We only had the numbers. The police, we don't have to get our law enforcement numbers up and then ask for a facility. You get in the facility, but you ain't got nobody. Who you gonna train in if you don't got them? Okay,
yeah.
I digress.
I agree. You speaking to me?
Mm-hmm. Well, I wanted to make sure to remember that the Fire Station Community Center isn't firefighters anymore. It's not a fire station anymore. That's just the name of the place. And the Parks and Rec is responsible for it now. They're trying to turn it into a mini community center next to a very small park. And so that's why. And they ought to name it after somebody, right? I mean, it ought to be so it has a name that doesn't confuse. I mean, that's the first point. The park and the community center ought to have somebody's name on it, whatever, okay?
I mean, they have it under Fire Station Community Center Replacement.
Right.
Okay.
They have an empty shell building that used to be a fire station. I think it had like two bay doors. It's right near Allen and 35, but on the west side of it.
Okay. So. Thank you for clarifying, because I was thinking, you know, that's sounding really crazy if we're looking at $50,896,000 for police and fire.
Firefighters.
Yeah.
I think people who are into police reform specifically,
mm-hmm.
given all the ways that we spend on police, all the CCPD money and the $80 million directly out of the regular general budget and all the federal money and the Bearcat votes and all those sorts of things, until we send a message, imagine if the payroll measure failed and the police measure proposition failed. Because one of the things this council doesn't do is read the room. I don't think they have that good of a pulse point on where the public set on issues. And the way to do this is to create a couple of hot button propositions and encourage people, even if you're for the other four, vote for the other four and send a clear message. We don't want you to keep throwing more money at police and fire until you clean up your act. I mean, you haven't even defined the problem. It's far less given us a plan on how to fix the problem, which includes staffing with much better, higher character, better ethical law enforcement officers. Y'all may know that they're doing a transfer program. They're offering incentives for officers from other jurisdictions to become Fort Worth police officers. And they're looking for people with 4 to 7 years experience. Yeah, they're advertising that. Yeah. And the truth is that half of those applicants are going to be coming from smaller departments, not because of money, but because they're skating past over thin ice. So that's the problem here is if you're not screening them and they have a bad record somewhere else, especially if they come a few counties over, then we're just adding to a problem that we haven't solved hardly at all. And so
Jay,
I think
we're going to say, bad apples? So we
yeah,
get,
what I'm worried about is that yeah, that their records are sealed and that the city's so desperate to hire people with a little bit of experience but still young that we'd be maybe even less careful than a raw recruit.
Wow.
So I think that you got to send the council a message, which is if most of the propositions pass but one or two of them don't, they have to step back and say, well, the voters went in the polls and they differentiated between one proposition and another, which means that the voters still aren't real happy with the whole police scene yet, if that's the one that gets defeated. And they're probably going to get a pretty, you know, solid message that the way they structured the pay raise wasn't a good idea. I mean, even if you're for pay raises.
We're getting there. We're going to get there before 9 o'clock. Seriously,
we're going to get there.
Okay.
Carrie, back on the fire, the fire department money. I have a quick response on that real quick. My thing is, like Thomas was saying or whatever, making a stand with city council. Okay, my thing is no money to the firefighters, no money to the fire department, whatever it is. I don't want no money until they take a stand against the Firefighters Association to stop them from buying candidates the same way I'm trying to get the PLA to stop buying candidates.
Yeah.
I think we got to get this out of our system. And it's almost the same thing as Thomas was saying, ethical stuff, same thing. So I would love for the firefighters, I'll tell you what, I would give them double if they would stand up and stop the Firefighter Association, okay? I'd be for double that if they would do that, okay? So that's where I stand on that, and that's my reason why, and that's a quick answer to that one. How's that?
Wow.
And,
listen, I'm going to say this to the troll. I'm not taking any more calls from what do you call those numbers? We're block numbers. If your number cannot be shown, then we can't talk to you tonight. So moving on. So, and if you call him back for Mr. McBride, he's already left the line. So, you know, reach him on his social media account. I don't know who you are. We're going to talk about Proposition C, which we skipped just a few minutes ago. Proposition C is for $12,505,000 for a new library in far northwest Fort Worth. I say no more libraries. I hate to say that, y'all. I love the kids, but we're just getting way too much money. We just built a library here on Lancaster. just a couple of months ago with the groundbreaking. It's just too much money. I'm sorry, it's just too much. I say no. That's just my opinion. How do y'all feel about a new library in the Northwest Fort Worth area? Is there not a library there already?
No, I don't think there is one. Not that's a Fort Worth library. But I do think it's curious that we'll be the largest city in America without a downtown library, because they already sold. The central library, even though it's really far for people that live outside of Loop 820 to go to, is not like all the other branch libraries or regional libraries. And so here they are on one hand. You've sold downtown real estate because it's a hot commodity and you think you can get a lot of money for it. But you're also, you know, it's the depository for all the best books. It's the only free law library in the county. There's a lot of special service there, including research. And so to be a world-class city or to be an educated city, you have to have a central library that has, you know, one-of-a-kind literature or works of art or whatever. We already had it. And what you're saying is, no, we want another regional one way out northwest. But part of the way we're also willing to ditch the one that, you know, everybody, especially nearby folks, can go to. So I think that it's kind of supposed to be like the hub of a wheel, and that all the branch libraries are out at the ends of the spokes. And that's not the way they're structuring this. And so I'm not really for or against Northwest having a library, because I can tell you that a lot of those folks out there are conservative, a little libertarian. They kind of tend to be against libraries. For the few poor folks or people who don't have internet access in that part of Fort Worth, they don't care about them. Their attitude is, well, we got, you know, high-speed internet at home.
All the money is out in Northwest. Yeah. They get the big police station, the police compound, and all that out there. They get it all. They got the money.
But there's always a small percentage of households that's lower middle-class income or single income.
Sure.
And kids, you know. I mean, in other words, there's too many programs that are good that are after school or connected to having a satellite library. And, I mean, I think it's actually the smallest amount, isn't it, Carrie, of all the propositions? If you did the math, even the payment.
That proposition is $12,505,000. So it is the smallest amount.
Right. It's the smallest one.
And to Thomas' point regarding the central library being shut up, you know, I think who was going to affect the most, you got families that use, it's used throughout the week, but who's going to be affected the most by that? The homeless. And what I say about the homeless is because a lot of homeless people, that was their outlet. A lot of homeless people go there to utilize computer services, you know, just do various things, you know. But I think that takes a quote-unquote blight out of the city, you know. You'll have less homeless people, you know, roaming through the city streets, you know, giving forth that, you know, that look they don't like, that bad look. So I hate it for them, because a lot of them, that's the only place they had to go to. That's the only hub they had to go to, you know.
Yeah,
and I used to go.
Pretty good there. I mean, you're talking about something pretty – maybe we should have a homeless rec center where they can actually go in and have libraries, everything that everybody else has.
Wow.
Does that make sense?
Well, I also think maybe – I mean, we might be missing this is three or four of the most qualified and educated librarians in the system are in the downtown library. So when somebody has to research something that's really obscure or really deep, or they have to be acquired from another country or another state, that's what the central library's role is. Also, for folks that do pro bono law stuff or are facing, whether it's civil, they have a full law library that any Fort Worth citizen can go into on the second floor of the central library. Where are they going to put it now? I mean, and there's those kinds of collections. So there's those kind of collections. So even though magazines and periodicals are going out the door, the only place in the city where someone can go and read, say, the Hartford News from Connecticut, for whatever reason they want to, is if they go to the central library. And so, and in addition to homeless or downtown residents, there are people, including researchers from the universities, that sometimes have to go to the big city's central library to get help with accessing resources or reference materials. And the people that are specialists at this are housed in the central library. We don't have enough of them to put in the library. So that's the mistake. So I believe this is David. I think this is David Cook's idea. I don't think he has a strong value for education or reading skills or higher level research. So he sees this as a downtown piece of commercial real estate.
And he doesn't have a good reputation for keeping his word either. He won't give him a meeting.
Well,
go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off, Thomas. Go ahead.
Let me make an announcement real quick, y'all. It's 8:55, and typically we go off at 9 o'clock, but we're not going to make it by 9 o'clock. We're going to have to go over a little bit. That says at the straight-up 9 o'clock hour, if you're listening via the Internet, you will not be able to hear the rest of the show. The only way you will be able to hear the rest of the show is to jump on the phone line. And if you're listening via phone, you'll still be able to hear the end of the show. So, again, if you're listening via Internet, hop on the phones. The phone number is at the top of your screen, the right top of the screen. It's 515-605-9321. So jump off the Internet now before the end of the hour and jump on the phone lines, because at 9 o'clock you won't be able to get in the phone lines. So before 9 o'clock, jump off of the Internet, call in to 515-605-9321, and just finish listening to the end of the show. Okay, y'all, let's talk about Proposition E. Now, this one bothered me a little bit because Proposition E is for $15 million for the city to open a square program which focuses on acquiring natural areas. Okay, so that's like prairie land, like land where there's not houses and things like that. It's just roaming area. Well, let me tell y'all what I know about I studied the New World Order pretty in-depthly several years ago with several people, several members of the Tea Party, and they taught me a whole lot. They were regular listeners of the show. There's going to be, under the New World Order, and again, I don't want to get real deep with this tonight. You do your own research. Agenda 21, Agenda 2030, all of that explains. It's like the blueprint for the New World Order. But that's it. In the New World Order, it's going to be large portions of land in certain sections of cities that is going to be for prairie land. So when I read this description, I was thinking to myself, oh my gosh, this stuff is kind of getting scary. So that's basically what they're wanting to do with this prairie land stuff. And it's pretty interesting because this is what they're saying they want to do. They want to use it for an ecosystem preservation, streams, rivers, and lake health, community health, recreation, flood control, equitable access to open space, and then it goes on to say for economic development. Now, this is the one that gives me, you have to read this stuff and understand and tie it all together. This is the one that caught my attention. It says equitable access to open space. It says conserving natural areas that benefit low-income, underserved, and marginalized neighborhoods and communities. Well, let me translate for you what I think that means. I think that means that eventually they're trying to get us all into stackable homes, and so we're all going to be in concrete jungles, and so therefore these wild prairie lands will be the place that we'll use as our front yard to go and play or our backyard to go and play. Do y'all follow where I'm going with that, or is that way too deep for y'all?
It's not deep. Thanks for elaborating on it. No, it's nothing too deep. You're trying to help us prepare for what's to come, you know. So
most people, when you say New World Order, they think, well, I don't know, that's that conspiracy theory stuff. But y'all, listen, these bike trails and stuff like this, it's very clear that and the amount of space, $15 million worth of free space, that's a lot of land, y'all.
What land are they planning on acquiring? Because Tarrant County, I mean, I know they're restricted by what they can and cannot acquire, how much land. So it has to be within the bounds of our Fort Worth's city limits, right? Can they go outside of it? It has to be within it. So what areas are they going to acquire, you know, for this particular
Well, remember that our city goes into Parker County, Denton County now, and Denton County. And so a lot of like most of the folks on the show, including me, we tend to think in terms of inside Loop 820. And even when we think about the suburban communities just outside the loop, we forget that most of northwest Tarrant County, which has a bunch of undeveloped Fort Worth in it, a little bit of the North Fort Worth corridor has undeveloped, like large plots of land still. And when you get into southern Denton County, which Fort Worth has 7,000 or 8,000 residents already, and Parker County, that Walsh Ranch on both sides of I-20 and Highway 80, these are going to be new Fort Worth residents. What they're trying to do is, before the acreage just gets scary expensive, is to lock up a few lots that are sometimes only 10 acres, which really isn't a big piece of land out in Texas. But inside Tarrant County, that's a pretty big plot, right? Mm-hmm. I understand all of the health, environmental, scientific benefit. We got so much man-made surfaces being paved that just having plots of land that can absorb water are critical for all kinds of things, cleanliness and flooding and all that sort of stuff. What they're hoping to do is buy a few pieces of land, because even though $15 million sounds like a lot, you got to realize that an open blank lot that's never been developed, that doesn't have sewer and water and electric on it yet, in Tarrant County, that costs about $35,000 an acre. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, in Parker County, selling for around $15,000 to $17,000 an acre. Same thing with Denton. And so the $15 million, 100 acres at $15,000 is $1.5 million. You're not talking about, just tons of, if you've been to the Fort Worth Nature Center, which the city of Fort Worth owns, and it's on Lake Worth and Eagle Mountain Lake, I think they're trying to buy up little pieces of raw land that are still available before they become zoned commercial and the developer wants to turn it into a, whatever, whether it's apartments or commercial development. So the thinking is, and remember that Sycamore Park and what's the other park that's southeast Fort Worth, those are huge parks physically. The park that runs all the way to the TCC and the resource connection down there, those parks have they're most natural prairie land and trees already in the city and in the county. And what's really screwed up is the resource connection, where there's a bunch of, public services and a couple other estate buildings. That's the largest contiguous piece of prairie land with natural grasses in North Texas, except when you get out towards Wichita Falls. And believe it or not, the county owns and controls that, not the city. So the truth is if the city was going to buy that land and keep it park-like and natural, I think that's actually the goal there. These are usually those ecology. I have a bunch of friends that I network with, those older folks that really like the environment and parks and the ecology and clean air and clean water kind of advocates are making the city, spend this $15 million. I don't think it's a conspiracy.
Well, we shall see, because, we do know that just because they're spending $15 million this time doesn't mean that they won't come back and ask for another $15 million in the next fund package for the same thing.
Yeah.
So it doesn't mean that this is the end. It could be this is just the beginning. But anyway, y'all, let's get to this Proposition F. This is the elephant in the room that's been there all night long. Fort Worth Proposition F deals with the fact that the Fort Worth City Charter to be amended to provide that the mayor's annual pay shall be half the average annual base rate salary for all city department heads, and that the other city council members' annual pay shall be half of the average annual base rate salary for all city assistant department heads starting October 1st. So, do they deserve a raise or don't they deserve a raise? Now, can I say this? And I think I was trying to say this with Kara, and I did not get a chance to complete my thought. I'm not against a raise because I know that everything's going up. Groceries going up, gas is going up, the price for a new car, rent, everything is high. I get that. But I think that you have to prove yourself before you ask for a hefty raise. And so whoever has that noise in the background, can you mute that? And so I think in order for you to come and ask for a $50,000 raise and a $70,000 raise, I think you got to do something pretty big to get it. And so I would have been more comfortable had they asked for $40,000 for council, $50,000 for the mayor, and with the amendment that any future raises, they've got to come back before the city council and ask the people again for raises. Now, that I would have been comfortable with. So does anybody agree with me that a raise is not the bad thing, is how much they ask for?
Well, somebody's doing something to your show here, aren't I?
I apologize, y'all. It's me. I'm outside, and there's a train nearby. I'll mute it.
Okay. Well, no. Answer the question before you mute yourself. So what do you think? Did they ask for too much? Did they not ask it the right way?
They relied on the city staff, and David Cook and his senior staff thought they were going to be slick, and they knew how to sell them on the equity thing and the issue of making it more accessible for regular folks, and Beck and Nettles and Williams and a few, and Matty Parker bought into that because Matty Parker wants to get paid more too. So he figured out how to co-opt them and then slipped in tying his pay to their pay. And they didn't use any critical thinking. They didn't use any critical thinking to realize that the public wasn't going to like that part of it at all. Even if the public was okay with the pay raise, they weren't going to be okay with surrendering the power to approve future raises. And this is the core issue here. The city council, they're running around their district and the city doing things. And maybe they are spending 60 hours a week on city-related things, but their interpretation of what city-related is very different than the regular voters. And that's what I'm saying here is that, I mean, they had to learn their jobs a little, and I know Chris Nettles talked about how many real estate and land votes and zoning changes you have to bone up on in order to be prepared, even from your own district. But the problem here is that such a hot-button issue, they handed off way too much to the city staff, and the city staff gave them a poison pill. They want the public to swallow the goodies, and tucked in there is a poison pill. I mean, why? And they're hoping that it'll be done. And let me give you a parallel poison pill. The fire department and firefighters, including their association, have a much better reputation with most Americans than the police officers association does. I mean, they're not perfect, and they certainly, you know, back candidates and control things like Bob says, but this is why the proposition puts the firefighters' investment in the same vote as the police officers. They're hoping that the people who like paramedics and EMTs and firefighters but don't like cops will vote for the measure too. So this is David Cook and staff bundling the two entities into one vote. It's not like Parks and Rec. They're not putting Parks and Rec and the Water Department together, or Streets and, you know, Public Works. They bundled the people that consider, most people consider the firefighters the good guys, and lots of people think the police officers aren't such good guys. So they put both those in one bond vote, so that people will swallow it, whether they, you know, reluctantly, because they may think, well, we need new firehouse or new fire trucks or. This is what they're doing. It's called bundling, and they bundle them together, just like the two measures in one for the payroll vote. Mm-hmm. So this is another way that the city council is shirking their duty. Their duty is to be critical thinkers and to not always take everything that the staff recommends to them. And
I agree.
Yeah,
I agree with
that. Nobody.
I agree.
I mean, do you think that none of the nine of them looked at the proposal and said, hey, I, of course we want raises and we think it's a good idea, but I'm not so sure about taking this away from the voters.
Oh, wow.
It either means that they either agreed with it or they're too naive to realize what this means. I think that some of them knew. And let me tell you, I think Carrie Moon knew. I think Harvey Firestone knew. I think Michael Keane probably knew. But I think some of our ally types didn't realize what this means, because now they have to be nice to David Cook instead of holding him accountable.
Oh, wow.
If they want to raise 2 years from now and they're reelected, they have to play the game with David Cook instead of, you know.
And I think that last election where they tried to, sneak it on the ballot, and the voters, they snuck it on the ballot. They snuck it on the ballot, and the voters unequivocally they voted it down. So like you say, it's this time around they got it padded, you know. So like Carrie made a good point, because I'm always at the verge of just going to that ballot booth and just pushing no on everything. I can't get it wrong if I push no on everything. I might be 1 out of 100,000 people who vote, but I think if I push no on everything, hey, my conscience will be clear. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I think if you split your vote, and I mean,
right.
I think if the city, the whole populated city, splits their votes, doesn't all vote yes or doesn't all vote no? And there's a clear outcome, because remember what happened in the county vote. The one issue, the county had 4 or 5 propositions, and two lost. One of the ones that lost bad, like really bad, was the district attorney wanted a $123 million building that none of the public could go to. Like, even if you're a crime victim, you can't go into that building to a lobby and get help. Okay, I'm not exaggerating. Even the county commissioners didn't like it, because that meant that you're going to build this giant building and there might be open space for a while, and the current district attorney, Sharon Wilson, didn't want to have to share any space with anyone. She wanted her own standalone building, and it lost because she didn't read the room, because she didn't understand the pulse point, because she didn't realize that this was way over the top. And this goes to the politics of DAs that think that their only job is to prosecute criminal matters. They have a whole bunch of other responsibilities, like keeping all the other governments accountable. And so I'm telling you that by splitting people's vote, no matter, everyone can vote on whichever proposition they want, but when the propensity of people vote 70-30, for example, against the pay raise, let's see how good our city council is at interpreting what that means. I mean, obviously, you know, the majority of us didn't want the pay raise, but are they going to figure out it was the second amendment?
It's coming out of a speaker or something on this. I hate this flip phone I got. It's not. It's under the line, but people on the speaker. Let me see here.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just
funny. I think Sarah's still listening in. Someone called in or was trying to call in or something, and then I think she mentioned Carrie mentioned something about Tara was still there, but you had left. But you have left, and then that Tara was still there.
Bob doesn't know that we can hear him. So let me tell you the reasons I have a problem with this raise. First of all, I think that we should not raise it for the reason that I said. The amount is too high. And then I think the fact that the council is always tardy. No job is going to appreciate you when you always show up late. And this is just something that – yeah, they're just habitual with it now. They're just like all the time late. I mean, council never starts on time. And I got to give it to her predecessor, Maddie Parker's predecessor was on time. I mean, there's a whole lot I didn't agree with Betsy Price on, but Betsy Price was very professional, you know, and she did start on time. This other thing I have a problem with is the fact that we keep voting in blocks. You know, there's no individual thinkers up there. So I got a problem with that. And then I got a problem with the fact that when you all have agenda items, it doesn't matter what the speaker says. If somebody comes up with a public comment and they want to speak on the agenda item, you don't hear them. You all have already predetermined what the outcome will be. So that means it doesn't even matter if the speaker says the house is on fire. Y'all don't hear them. All you all have decided is what you're going to do, which is scary, because that means that you're not voting the will of the people and you're not even listening to the will of the people, that you all have already predetermined what you're going to do. So your minds are already made up. And in most, let me finish, In most cases, you all don't even say, let's have a motion to continue. So we can even take into consideration what the person is saying. So there's no consideration at all. And then the fact that KERA came out this week and said that you all had the violation of the Open Meetings Act, I have a problem with that. The fact that y'all got all these people up there working, you got an attorney sitting right next to you. How can you all be making these types of mistakes that could possibly have you redo everything that you've done from September to March? So,
Hundreds of people spoke on subjects that they cared about one way or the other, and all that time was wasted too.
Runoff, and it was her and Baylog.
It's still going. So we're talking about they're spending too much money. The open meetings violation. You know, the fact that you're always tardy. You know, that you're voting in blocks and not listening to the people, that you don't even take into consideration what the public thinks. I think, and the fact that you're disrespectful to the speakers. I think anybody that takes the time to come out to speak to you all on their own time, on their own dime, and all they get is 3 minutes, and you all can't give them 3 minutes of your undivided attention where you listen.
Yes.
You're not whispering to each other. You're not laughing at the speakers, that you really get what they're saying, and you sit there attentively like you care. So the lack of professionalism and all the above, the things that I've mentioned, I think right now you're just not ready for a $50,000 and a $70,000 raise. That's just my personal opinion. And I know that was limited, y'all, but that's just really how I feel.
And you know what's ironic and terrible is, the three guys that don't need the raise, they're the ones that are probably the best at managing their time and the best at delegating.
Wow.
Well, that's what's ironic here is, you know, the truth is, and it starts with the mayor, and, you know, I mean, she's who she is. You're really not, when you talk about lack of professionalism, not starting on time, not being at the podium on time for this active city council meeting. I understand you could be late during the day for this meeting or that subcommittee or whatever, but this is showtime.
Yeah.
So you need almost all of you need a time management class. You all need some course on how to delegate to your staff, or you ought to be advocating for having the mayor has a bunch of her buddies as staff, but the council members have one assistant. And the truth is yes, the scale of responsibility may be too big for one person, so you ought to be talking about budgeting for one or two or three specialists that work for each council member, like a constituent advocacy person for, you know, an individual has a problem with the street in front of them or whatever, that person. Instead of claiming, oh, we're working 60 hours a week and we need more money, get better at managing your time, get better at delegating, and get better at letting the committees and commissions that you appoint help you do your job more efficiently.
Let me piggyback off that. To be clear, redistricting did not have to sit in your lap. CCPD appointees and appointments do not have to sit in your lap. So those are things that the city council has taken on that they could pass off to other people and delegate it, and therefore you would free up more time. You agree with that?
Yeah, that's right, and that's true for a few others. There's a few, they're afraid to let the people decide. Isn't that interesting? There's plenty of diversity on these committees and boards. These are smart, educated people. A lot of them are a little bit older than the council. They often have experience in the exact subject area. Why don't you listen to them and let them do their thing? It's like they don't trust. They trust the staff more than they trust the people.
It's so much better. You know what? Yeah. You can't always be the smartest, the sharpest tool in the toolbox. You know, there are people smarter than you. If I was in that position and I will be in one of those positions one day, I don't know, it's going to be 4,000 these city councils, it's going to be somewhere. But if I'm in that position and I'm learning and there's somebody around me that's smarter than me, I say smarter because there's people that are smarter than us, I will be more than gladly willing to listen and get advice and guidance and direction, because I don't always have to be the one to act like I know. But you know what?
Yeah.
Nobody wants to look like they don't know anything. Nobody wants to look like they know anything. They want to look like they got it all together, and that's as far from the truth that you got it all together. So, like I say, the voter wave, like I always been saying, the voter wave is alive. I disagree with Ms. Terrace here regarding people running, because a lot of people are using that as talking points now. When people who want to run that can't run, it's making it hard for them. Poor people who want to – no, the last election showed you it was a multitude of people running, and I guarantee everybody who was running for election didn't have a bank full of money to run. They used social media. They use networking with people they knew. They jumped on, like I did, jumped on a lot of different platforms that offered me to come on and speak. I didn't have no signs out there. I didn't do none of that. But you know what? The people who voted for me, I'm grateful to them, because you know what that says to me? Somebody heard me. Somebody saw me. So it's not about that money. You talk about 60 hours a week. Foolish. What were you doing before city council? It ain't like you ain't never worked a 40-hour-week job. Some of us work 80. Some people work 80 hours a week. You're not doing no more than the next person. You're not doing no more than the next person. You're not doing any more than the next person.
No. Yeah, I mean, I know there are people in the world that work harder than me or put in more hours because of a combination of circumstances. But there's a couple hundred thousand self-employed people in this city. They don't have any empathy for the story. I mean, it's the truth, you know, and that's why they can't come to the city council meeting at 6 o'clock, and that's why they can't call in, and that's why, unfortunately, a whole lot of them don't have time to even go vote as often as we need them to. But the self-employed people don't understand any of your points, Elizabeth Beck. And the thing that's ironic about that, well, she's my councilwoman, and I'm pretty frustrated with her. But here's the point about Elizabeth Beck. She is a single mom. She does have two teen daughters. I don't know all the details of how she got to a place. She does have her military experience and a law degree, and those are all skill sets on top of everything else. However, the Southwest community of Fort Worth and Southwest Tarrant County have invested $1.7 million in getting her elected. That's the way that you have to look at that. Think about this. She ran for the Texas House and lost. But in that race, local donors donated almost $1 million. It was $900,000-something. She lost the race, but what did it do for her? It built a whole bunch of name recognition and a whole bunch of familiarity. So when she ran for city council, she already had a leg up on Fernando Peralta and a whole bunch of other people. And, you know, for Fernando Peralta, he's not a rich man. He might not make any more money than she does. And what I'm saying is because of name recognition, she raised another $400,000 or $500,000 to win the city council seat. And except for the mayor's race, nobody raised more money. And so her own donors, which are a lot of smaller or grassroots, a lot of little old ladies that have a little bit of money in Southwest Fort Worth or Fairmount, gave her money. Some of them could give her $100 to $500. They're not impressed with some of this stuff that she's coming back with. I mean, they like a few things she's done with homeless and stuff like that. But what I'm saying is, you know, we don't need to keep hearing you whine about stuff anymore. I mean, this is the job you wanted. I'm not kidding, you know. I mean, you're an adult with a law degree, and, you know, I mean, this is – what did you think the assignment was? Seriously.
Thomas, real quick. You can't be whining and then calling people racist. You can't be calling people putting labels on people that's unfounded. You're gonna have to be like Shakira said. You got to be a professional. And a lot of them have made it personal when people get up there speaking before them. Everything is personal. That's why we're getting the back and forth with them, or they shutting people down now from speaking, because they've made it personal, and it's nothing personal. But we vote you in. We're going to hold you accountable. It's just accountability. That's all it is. Yeah.
I had lunch every Friday that I'm in town. I have lunch with this big group of activists. They're almost all older than me. A lot of these people are really experienced in local and state politics. One's a retired representative.
And a lot of the women are massive supporters of Elizabeth, but they're paying attention. And their attitude is you're in the power seat now. Stop painting and giving speeches where you're punching down at people because you don't like what they said. That's not your job description anymore. You're not running for higher office yet, so stop grandstanding at the expense of one of the citizens that comes before you. Because I guarantee you, she better not do that to one of those little old ladies that donated her money. And, you know, they come some. And the other thing on that that's pretty interesting is, remember that a lot of neighborhood groups and special interest groups and change groups wanted to participate in the redistricting process. On top of all of that, this group that I know most of the people in called the Citizens for Independent Redistricting. Mm-hmm. They didn't want to run the show. They didn't want to be the entire committee, but they knew that three or four of those guys that are all retired are absolutely the most smartest and most qualified people to help with the mapping, the math, and the numbers. Those, you know, the Byron Ellison guy that would speak, or the Bruce Miller guy that would call in or speak. Mm-hmm. These guys are literally the geniuses of the city, okay? Bruce Miller is a retired physics professor, and Byron Ellison has the second highest IQ at NASA. The guy's only a year older than me, but he retired after working at NASA for 40 years. I'm not just trying to plug the guy. Let me tell you how smart he was about mapping and redistricting. Byron Ellison, as a joke, after the city council threw out all the maps, including the one that his little group submitted, which ended up being the one that kind of helped come up with the version of the horseshoe and how to draw Como into a district that would give him better participation. That's what came from that group, the X, originally. Okay, but Byrick, for fun, figured out a way to draw a map so that all nine of the current council members were gerrymandered in the one district. He said, how about we give them this map and tell them, the nine of you run against each other and we'll run eight people in the other spaces. He literally forgot he gerrymandered the whole city so that all nine of them would have to run against each other in order for them to get the point. And he submitted it, but they didn't get the point. And all I'm saying is that the city, I served on a committee the last time for the city like in 1996, and they assigned people from a bunch of different industries, including people that were specialists, and on both sides of the issue, which was a smoking ordinance. Mm-hmm. It took forever to pass a city smoking ordinance. It was ridiculous because tobacco companies interfered, national tobacco companies. But my point is, when the committee finalized the ordinance, the city looked at it and said, okay, that's what you guys recommend. Let's vote on it. And it was done. And so that's what this group's missing. And I do think that they're collectively they're young enough that they're actually being aged towards all these older folks that have tons of experience that could help them, especially the retirees that got time to help, you know? I mean,
we got to get out of here. But let's talk real quick, they're going to cut us off. Let's talk about Proposition 8. Is that yes or no? That's for the streets and mobility-related project. I say no. Y'all don't have a vote.
Well, I say yes, but I also say that there's like six bonds that have already been passed and paid for, and the money's sitting in the bank, and they haven't done the roads for a bunch of folks in other parts of the city. They've been sitting on three or four bonds.
Well, then use that money.
Yeah, they haven't used that money. Well, yeah, but these are for streets and yet new places. I'm saying that the roads that were already identified haven't been started, which is a tragedy.
Well,
I think that's the one that everybody – I think it'll pass by 80%.
Well, I'm saying no, simply because I think these things are padded. I think they're heavily padded. I think we will never know just how padded. And I just think this really needs to go back to the drawing board. This entire bond package. That's just my opinion. Proposition B deals with $123 million for the park and recreation. I say no, but I'm still talking to somebody. But I'm going to say the fact that we're redoing the golf course up there that really nobody uses in Meadowbrook, this aquatic center, which we know is not for the current people, the new community center that we know is not for the current residents but for the future residents after they get through gentrification, gentrifying the area. So in my opinion, no. Proposition C for the $12,505,000 for the new library, no. Because, again, what are we going to do with the new library? What are the people that need it in this section of town going to do? I disagree. Proposition D for the $39 million for the police and fire and public safety facilities, I say no. Proposition F for the $15 million for the city to open this wildlife area, no. And Proposition F, I say to the city council and the mayor, I don't mind y'all getting a raise. I just don't think you should get $50,000 and $70,000 at a time. That's my opinion. What do y'all think before we get out of here?
No. I think people need to be comfortable voting no on some or all and not vote straight one way or the other. I don't think anybody should be voting yes for all of them.
Yeah, I think I might get one. They might get one vote in for me on one. It's one thing I might get a vote. They might get one vote out of me. I might go one vote and the rest might be. But like you say, I got your point, Thomas.
Well, I'm going to say this. Call the city secretary's office and get her to give you the breakdown of everything that's on here that we talked about tonight so you can intelligently make the decision for yourself. Listen, y'all, we got to get out of here, but we want to thank James McBride and Tara Wilson and Bob Willoughby for hanging out with us tonight. We appreciate you. We want to thank you, the audience, for hanging out with us because we were really having a long time tonight, and that's typically not what we do. But tonight, we were a little long-winded. Also, listen, it's campaign season. To you, Mr. and Mrs. Candidate, if you would like to run a campaign ad here on Let's Talk Fort Worth, let's do it. Reach out to me either on social media or via my email at letstalkfortworth@aol.com. I'd love to talk to you about rates and plans to do campaigning right here or advertising your campaign right here on Let's Talk Fort Worth. Also, y'all, this is what we do right here at Let's Talk Fort Worth every single week. We try to bring you great content. We try to make sure that our topics are fluid. We don't want stale topics. We want topics that people are talking about. So if you like what we do here, feel free to donate to what we do. We have a PayPal account at paypalme.letstalkfortworth. That's paypal.me/letstalkfortworth. I think that's what it's called. Okay, listen. Follow us on Facebook. We got a Facebook page called Let's Talk Fort Worth. Again, it's called Let's Talk Fort Worth. Follow us on Facebook. Okay, y'all, we got to get out of here until next week. We've gone way over. Good night.